Who the fuck is that guy? Who the fuck is that?
Basketball.
Like the Bulls?
No, Pacers and Thunder.
Why?
It's on. It's something, okay. Something to watch.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Welcome to Stuff on HalfGuarded.com. My name is Matt. That is Mr. Michael Coughlin. Not a Bulls fan anymore. They've had a rough few years, right?
The team, honestly, I'm not even really sure they exist. I've literally heard nothing about the Bulls at all. Honestly, if they hadn't played a game this year, I wouldn't know.
Huh.
Yeah, they're just garbage. They're garbage, garbage.
Yeah.
Oh, they're there. I'm going to watch the Bulls now. Good.
It's easier to get tickets when your teams are bad. Like, I was looking at, like, Celtics tickets and Patriots tickets the other day, and they're expensive and hard to get, and you got to get everything off, like, StubHub now, and it's not worth it. Like, I like it when the team is, like, 1-15 back in 93. Those were the days.
Yeah, well, with the Bulls, because I was, you know, kind of came of age when Jordan was here.
Right.
And that was right when they built the United Center also. You could not buy season tickets to the Bulls. They had like a 10-year waiting list. It was something like, it was really fucking crazy. Like even now, I think there's a decent, I don't know if it's a long wait, but there's something there. Like people like their season tickets on that shit. I don't know.
Well, you can sell them. I mean, you get the season tickets and then you sell them for more money and you make a few bucks.
Yeah, but it's kind of, it's still the Bulls. They suck.
I know, but you never know when a team's going to get hot and be good. It's like, if you look at like the Celtics, they're still up and down over the last, you know, I don't even know, since like the 80s, the Bird era, they were good, then they sucked, then they were good, and then they sucked, now they're good again. So, you never know. I guess
I want to go to a basketball game now.
I haven't seen a basketball game in years.
Yeah, I mean, I was married last time I saw a basketball game.
You went with the ex-wife?
Yeah, and her mother and her cousin. It was his Christmas gift or something like that.
And how was that?
It was fine. It was good fun. Yeah.
All right.
It was basketball.
You never know. Sometimes family things get a little weird.
No, I always got along well with the family.
Okay. Fair enough. So this past weekend there were a few shows, nothing major. There was an Invicta. It was Invicta FC 26. Probably the most newsworthy thing from that show was Mackenzie Dern, who we talk about every so often here on the show. But she's the jiu-jitsu world champ. I think she's 25 now. She's had probably 5 or 6 pro fights. This is kind of a step up for her going into Invicta. She made 115 pounds, which she's had trouble in the past. And she beat a woman named Kayleen Medeiros, who's a former
UFC fighter.
She had a title fight in Invicta before. So a decent fighter, and Dern beat her by submission and armbar in the third round. Did you happen to see this fight?
No, I actually completely forgot about this entire show, but I'm going to turn it on right now just because I'm bored.
Fair enough. Talking to me is pretty boring. You were in Vegas, right?
Yeah, I was in Vegas, yeah.
And how was that trip?
It was good. It was, I didn't do anything stupid.
Did you establish, anything with the Vegas shooting?
Can't really talk about that right now.
Okay.
That's all I can say. I'm not allowed to talk about that.
Fair enough. I thought the only fight I really watched from the show was the Dern fight, and I thought she looked decent. Her striking is still kind of rudimentary. She's got a like a decent overhand right, I feel like, that landed a couple times, but obviously the ground game is going to be her bread and butter still. And once she got it to the ground, it looked like she was totally in control and calm, and got the armbar with just a few seconds left in the third round. So if you haven't seen it, I would check it out. She's a prospect. Whether or not she'll pan out, we don't know. I know you think she's kind of got the silver spoon in her mouth sort of thing going on, but we'll see. I mean, she's got something going on, and she made 115, which I thought was a good sign.
She's got a pretty face and nice tits and a legitimate background. I mean, that does help.
She does. And the main event, Jennifer Maia, I think, defeated Agnieszka Niedzwiedz.
Oh, yeah, I remember her. I actually do remember that just because the name is like, some names are just memorable.
Yeah, that one doesn't roll off the tongue that easy. Yeah, Jennifer Maia won, let's see, by unanimous decision, 49-46 on all three cards as she defended the Invicta flyweight title successfully.
Where's the darn fight on the card? Is it semi-main?
Semi-main.
Okay, I would call it for a while.
I think you could call this co-main.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Or just the main.
Maybe. So yeah, that was Invicta 26, and that's at the Scottish Rite Temple that we always never make fun of.
It's awesome.
Then on Saturday night, December 9th, from the Nelson Mandela Forum in Florence, Italy, we had Bellator. What was the number on this one?
You. No, not the other one.
I'm drawing a blank here.
In the back. Yeah. No. Oh, the bald one. Yeah, what was the Bellator number?
190.
Damn! I mean, what's it, way to go, Baldy. That's what we called the bald guy in the back. We call him Baldy.
That's creative. Because he doesn't have much hair, I'm guessing.
Yeah, we're a fun-loving bunch here.
In the main event, Rafael Carvalho defeated Alessio Sicara by knockout at 44 seconds of the first round. This was the only fight I watched on this show, to be honest with our listener. And Carvalho destroyed him. Like, he rocked him early and then knocked him out and hit him with some punches on the ground, and it was over. It wasn't pretty. It almost looked like a complete mismatch, or almost like a fixed fight, how easy Carvalho won this fight. I don't know what that means, if Carvalho's like a really good middleweight, or Sicara had a bad night, or what, but
I think Sicara's shot.
This was, it could be. That's a total possibility, but I mean, last week we were talking about Sicara had good striking, and he just got destroyed here on the feet.
Yeah, you know, the chin goes. Oh, I got Dern on. There we go. Good gosh, look at her.
Are you watching it on the UFC, like, Fight Pass?
Yeah.
Like, when you fast forward, do you have to keep hitting? Do you have a hard time fast forwarding on that?
No, I use the Apple TV, and I have to hit it like two or three times to go really fast, but other than that.
Yeah, maybe it's because I am using Sling, and it's a pain in the ass with the, I have a thing called Air TV. You're supposed to be able to hook like an antenna into it, which I haven't done, because I got rid of Xfinity. And, with the thing I'm using for Sling, it's called Air TV. Like, you have to hit the forward button and it only skips a minute ahead. So I can like skip, it took me forever. It was a pain in the ass, but I've got an Apple TV. I'll use that next time. Good advice. Thank you.
Yep.
Then also on Saturday, December 9th, we had UFC Fight Night, Swanson versus Ortega. I think this is 123, right, you guys?
Hey, did you want to get not bald? The hit the guy, the long, yeah, hairy behind him with all the hair. Yeah, I know we made him shave the mustache. It looks funnier. Was this 123? Yeah, 123.
Okay, great. In the main event, we had Brian Ortega defeating Cub Swanson by guillotine choke at 3:22 of the second round. Big win for Ortega here. I thought he looked good on the feet. Swanson had an edge, but Ortega's jiu-jitsu is nasty, man. Like, I don't know what it is about him. He's only, I think, 25 or 26 now. Cub Swanson's a black belt. I mean, he's not known for his jiu-jitsu, but it's not like he's some green MMA fighter who doesn't know what he's doing. And there were a couple times, once in the first round where Ortega had, I think it was an anaconda at the end of the first round, that was really close. And if the round hadn't ended, I think Swanson would have tapped eventually or gone out. If you looked at his face, he looked like he was in serious danger there. But the round ended, and then in the second, Ortega got a guillotine standing and jumped and kind of wrapped his legs around Swanson and eventually was able to kind of maneuver and move his arms and get the tap. But there's just something about Ortega's jiu-jitsu that he makes this shit look easy against really good guys. And post-fight, he said he was okay with Frankie Edgar getting the next title shot against Max Holloway, and he'd be happy to wait for the next shot. And he just came off like a really nice, easy-to-like guy. I want to say it was a star-making performance for Ortega because not a lot of people probably saw this show, but he looked really good, and I was impressed.
Yeah, he did all the things you're supposed to do. You know, when you get this kind of opportunity, he went in there against a guy who's got a long-term name, and he finished him, and then he cut a promo. Like, he talked a lot. It doesn't always have to be good. You just have to be able to get a sense for, who the person is. I think that's the most important thing when speaking. And, you know, that's why George St. Pierre works. His jiu-jitsu is just, it's nasty. It's that kind of dangerous jiu-jitsu where he ain't fucking around. He's just going to grab it and just crank as hard as he can. Cub Swanson even talked about why he tapped at the choke. He basically said, I'm just going to die. And that's when, you know, that happens sometimes. There are times when you just get choked, and it doesn't matter how tough you are or whatever, there's a weird-ass kind of panic that will set in that moment. And I'm guessing that's what old Cubby experienced. Is he? I'm just going to make a Cub Scout joke, but I can't find it. So yeah, Brian Ortega, good on him. I thought the promo afterwards was kind of weird.
It was, but I found him likable and kind of sincere. It was unusual. It was different, but he's like, oh, I just want to make money and help people. I'm like, that's different.
Yeah, like it worked because it was genuine. Otherwise, like, it came across as, like, this kind of, I don't know, like, I always think it's weird when people are like, I want to come out here and be a good person for everybody. Like, I want to be the good role model. I'm like, okay. But maybe that's an issue in poor communities of color and things like that. Because, like, it does tend to come from, you hear a lot of, like, black leaders talk about, like, we need to be a good role model. I'm like, you're supposed to do it. You're not supposed to, like, talk about it, but. And then you want to make a lot of money and then just give it to children. I'm like, again, because it seems genuine. I'm like, yeah, maybe this guy really does. Otherwise, I'd be like, oh, shut the fuck up. You sound like you're so full of shit. Like Hulk Hogan would say this shit as he peels off in his Porsche.
Yeah, I just something about him seemed genuine. Like you know how Sage Northcutt comes off? Like, uh-huh. Some people think he's fake and he's full of shit, but I think he's just genuinely, that's who he is. And for some people, it probably rubs him the wrong way. And I got kind of the same vibe from Ortega here, that he's just a good dude and trying to do right by the world. Whether or not that's who he really is, I don't know. I'm just going gut instinct here, but he seemed legit to me.
Yeah, he was more Tim Tebow than he was Roy Moore.
Roy Moore seems to believe what he says also, though. The one thing that nobody's really talked about with Ortega that I picked up on last week, and I didn't mention it, is he is undefeated. He's 13-0-1, but that one no contest is an overturned decision over Mike De La Torre in his UFC debut back in 2014. That's because he tested positive for drostanolone, which is something guys don't usually pop for anymore.
That's a stupid drug to fail for. Like, that's also like lower level fighter doesn't know what he's doing. You know, that could be the difference between somebody that comes up through a big camp and somebody that doesn't. And maybe he's, right. He's California. He's got that kind of California Fight Club vibe to him.
Kenner Grace.
Yeah, like he seems like he's actually part of like the Cub Swanson world. Like, there's just these dudes that they can just picture them beating the shit out of each other on the beach. or something like that. You know, maybe arguing over whose board that was and shit.
Did you see Henner Gracie invented a hoodie that turns into a backpack?
That's a really weird thing for a jiu-jitsu guy to create.
Well, it, like, people are retweeting it and putting it out there. Basically, like, you can wear this hoodie, and then, like, the strings that, like, come down from, like, the hood can turn into, like, the straps for your backpack, and you turn it inside out and can carry your shit around. He's trying to market it and sell it. I saw Helwani, like, retweet it and said, this is, like, the most amazing thing I've ever seen. It's, like, it's just odd. I don't know why I bring it up.
Sounds stupid as fuck. Like,
I'm not sure if you're wearing a hoodie, why all of a sudden you would need to put a bunch of stuff in your backpack. I'm not really sure how that would come about, but I'm wicked hot, but I also have a bunch of stuff I need to carry, so I'll take my hoodie off and turn it into a backpack. That's like the only time, if the weather changes dramatically and all of a sudden you have a bunch of shit you gotta carry, that's the only time that would come in handy. Otherwise you're gonna be cold with a backpack that's kinda crappy made out of your sweatshirt.
Yeah, it just seems like, you know, you buy a hoodie, it's not just utility, like there's some style to it. And you want like a stylish backpack. He's a jiu-jitsu guy. Does he really think he's like inventing some sort of new functional clothing that the history of man hasn't come up with? Like, we don't need new forms of clothing. Maybe new designs or whatever like that, but we figured it out. It's either pants or a skirt and then a shirt. That, like, nobody's ever been like, you know, maybe we need something for just the elbows, like, or something like that. Well, we do, actually, elbow pads. Like, literally, we have something to cover every single part of the body. We don't need a hoodie backpack, you asshole.
Do you think this win was enough for Ortega to jump the line ahead of Edgar?
No.
Or do you think he needs it? So, anybody in particular you'd like to see Ortega fight next?
Korean Zombie.
Okay, and if he can beat Korean Zombie, you think he gets a title shot?
Yeah, I think he could have a strong case for it. Not like anybody else is gonna have, you know, anything.
Because, I mean, he is undefeated at this point. He's never lost, and most of his fights he's finished. I think he's finished every fight in the UFC. Let me confirm that.
One decision, but.
No, every fight is, besides the De La Torre fight that was overturned. He beat Thiago Tavares by TKO, Diego Brandão by triangle, Clay Guida by knockout, Renato Moicano by guillotine, and Cub Swanson by guillotine.
Man, that's a pretty damn good run. But again, I want to see him fight. I mean, even Korean Zombie, I feel it's kind of interesting because I think of him as almost old school now, just because he was from WEC. And it's like, again, Ortega's doing what you're supposed to do. He's beating guys like Guida and Swanson, who are good names, but especially like Guida, I don't really think anything of it. Like, I don't really think it matters. Whereas, like, Holloway beat so many of these dudes with both big names and small. I guess he could be this next generation of guys. You know, if that's what happens, eventually some new breed of fighter, a new name pops up, and you go, oh, okay, this is the next guy. All right, let's all get behind him.
Yeah, I mean, he's ranked fourth in the division now. It goes Aldo, Edgar, Lamas, then Ortega. So, I mean, he's in the mix. I mean, I think Edgar gets the next fight versus Holloway. And then, Lamas, I think, is fighting the little roided up looking guy.
Chad Mendes?
No.
I mean, Lamas fights this weekend.
Yeah, he's fighting. I can pull it up. Hang on. Josh Emmett.
Oh, yeah, like a guy I can't even picture what he looks like.
He's like got a shaved head and he looks like he's.
Yeah, that narrows it down.
Lifts a lot of weights.
That narrows it down.
So maybe Lamas wins, then you do the Ortega fight. That would make sense. I'm looking at the featherweight rankings and, Magomed Sherpov isn't even ranked in the top 15 yet. Which seems like a kind of a crime, but Calvin Kattar is ranked 15th.
I don't go to 15. I don't know who Calvin Kattar is.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying Magomed Sherpov should be in the top 15, you would think. Like, that would be an interesting fight. Two younger guys,
oh, yeah.
And see where they're both at. I would watch that fight.
If I was Ortega, I'd be a little bit like, this is bullshit. Like, I'm 10-0 or whatever, 57-0, and I beat everybody and finish them all, and I'm beating all these names on the cusp of title shot, and you want me to take on this fucking the caveman looking motherfucker over here who's who nobody knows who he is, but he's really, really good at fighting? Fuck you.
Well, you look at the division, but it's like, I guess he can fight Korean Zombie. Zombie's ranked 6th, so.
Yeah, I have Zombie at 6.
There's Go Llamas. Go the winner of Emmett Llamas. That would be fine. Number one contender fight.
You could do that also, but I think that, you put him with Yair Rodriguez or Jeremy Stevens even. Who knows?
Also, for what it's worth, tough loss for Swanson, who was basically a win away from a title shot, too. He was in the mix for that Aldo-Holloway fight, and it went to Aldo instead of Swanson, and now he's lost, and he'll need to run off a few wins to get back in the mix for a title shot. So Swanson came up short again, which is kind of a bummer for him.
Yeah, that's the end of his chances for a title shot.
In the semi-main event.
He's old, and he's old.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, he was winning on the feet. He just, nobody can touch Ortega's jiu-jitsu. It's like, once he gets a hold of your neck, you're done. It's like getting punched by Francis Ngannou. If you get hit on the chin, you're done. If Ortega gets a hold of your neck, you're done. It's just, it is what it is. In the semi-main event, Gabriel Benitez defeated Jason Knight. In a weaker semi-main event, if there's ever been one. Scores were 30-26, 30-26, 29-27. Knight, who goes by the nickname of Hick Diaz, lived up to that. He looked terrible, but he also managed to bite Benitez's finger in the first round. Benitez kind of had just like a headlock on him, and Knight bit his finger and lost a point, and that's what led to the 30-26 cards. Overall, just Knight did not look good, and Benitez outstruck him and got the decision win.
Literally all I really remember from this was the bite, because it was so weird. And also, the other times I've seen people bite, they deny it. Whereas, he immediately was like, oh yeah, sorry, that was me, I'm bad, my bad. It made me think it was completely unintentional. So I don't think you should have had a point taken away. To me, I don't know, I feel like biting is one of those where either it's unintentional or you disqualify somebody. There's no middle ground. Like, you shouldn't lose a point. You bit a man. You lose. You're not allowed to bite. What the fuck?
Knight claims it was accidental, but how do you accidentally bite someone?
I can see somebody like, nah, you're grappling. Fingers get in your mouth. And maybe you're gritting or somebody, you strain or in that exact moment. It could happen. Yeah.
Okay. I guess it's possible. Prior to that,
how have you not bitten a man's fingers before? I mean, isn't this a rite of passage for people?
I've never had a man's fingers in my mouth, I don't think.
Well, it's more disturbing. I don't know what's more disturbing, that you're not sure if you have or that you haven't.
Remains to be seen, I guess. Prior to that, we had Marlon Moraes defeating Aljamain Sterling by knockout with a knee at 107 of the first round. Sterling was going in for it looked like a takedown, and as he did, Moraes just hit him with this knee, I think it was his left knee, knocked Sterling out cold. It was over. Sterling didn't get up. He had to be stretchered out of the arena. Kind of a highlight knockout for Moraes, who came in on short notice, former WSOF champ. Looked really good in this fight.
Yeah, this is, probably easily the biggest win of his career, maybe. Certainly the most spectacular I can recall. So yeah, good for him. This is him arriving in the UFC finally.
I agree.
Shedding that, PFL WSOF stink.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, he's kind of in the mix at bantamweight and looked really good. So bantamweight is a fun division right now too. I mean, He's got like the combination of striking and takedown defense that's going to cause problems for a lot of guys in that division. Obviously, bantamweight's kind of weird right now with TJ Dillashaw possibly fighting Demetrius Johnson next. So you've got Garbrandt Cruz, Sun Sal, those guys ahead of him, and Jimmy Rivera as well. So probably a big fight for Marlon next, where he'll probably be one fight away from a title shot.
No, he's at least two or three.
You think? You think if he gets like Cody Garbrandt next, he beats Garbrandt?
He's not gonna get Garbrandt. If he fights Garbrandt and beats him, he maybe gets a title shot. Otherwise, you're gonna have guys like Garbrandt and Jimmy Rivera and even like a Sun Sal Cruz. There's enough names ahead of him who are pretty good that he's gonna have to probably beat at least two of them. Just time wise, he's gonna want to be active enough, and he's not like he's some big name where he can be like, well, I'm just gonna take some time off and wait. Unless you're Tyrone Woodley, where it actually worked out. That never made any sense. That fucking chutzpah, that man. Chutzpah. By the way, happy Hanukkah, everybody. The chutzpah of Woodley to say, nah, I'm just going to wait for my title shot. And then they gave it to him. He's fucking Tyrone Woodley. What the hell was that?
Timing's everything, man. Sometimes they need somebody to fight, and the card, people are hurt, and people are holding out for more money, and the timing works. It doesn't always. It usually doesn't, but for Woodley, it worked out, I guess.
Yeah. Now he's going to get beat by Colby Covington.
I think Woodley is basically called out RDA. He said if RDA can beat, Robbie Lawler next, he will fight RDA. He's trying to avoid Covington. Covington made fun of him and said, oh, you want to fight another, lightweight.
Oh no, so, Covington's been brilliant. Like, this is prime Chael material here. And it's not Connor, it's pure Chael. But, I mean, look, if RDA beats Lawler, that's a huge win. And I wouldn't, say he's not in that mix, but, sorry, if you're champion, he's not the kind of guy you should be like, that's the guy I need to fight next. Like, that's the undisputed number one contender. Like, no, it's a fucking midget you want to beat up on because you just suck.
A lot of decisions across the rest of this card. Scott Holtzman defeated Daryl Horcher, Eric Anders defeated Marcus Perez, and Benito Lopez defeated Albert Morales, all by unanimous decision. I remember there was one fight with a lot of bad stand-ups. I think it was a Holtzman-Horcher fight, where Holtzman had mount and his legs wrapped around Horcher's legs, and it got stood up. So some weird refereeing, I guess you could say. The rest of this card, rather forgettable from what I remember.
Yeah, and I watched the whole thing. It was just kind of there in the background. It was not like I ever thought anything was the worst ever, but it was just there, and then it fades into the ether.
When you say you watch the whole card, do you watch the Fight Pass prelims too?
Usually. I didn't this time, but oftentimes I'll watch them. At least something that I want to see, like we all do.
I only watch things that I want to see. That's
actually not true. I watch a lot of shit I don't want to watch. I'm like, I better watch this.
In other news...
Other people's kids, stuff like that.
Yes, okay. I hear you. So last week we talked a little bit about Manny Pacquiao wanting a fight with Conor McGregor. This past week, it's kind of old news, but we haven't talked about it. Dana White has threatened to sue Pacquiao because of these claims. Pacquiao recently revealed that he held initial talks with Conor McGregor over a boxing match, but Dana White is furious that Pacquiao hasn't gone through his team to secure a bout with the UFC champion. Pacquiao recently said of his potential fight with McGregor, if we can negotiate it, I have no problem. Initially, we had talks, but we have not had any follow-up conversations. White said that would be weird because McGregor's under contract with us. If that's true, I will be suing Manny Pacquiao and whoever's representing him, so I'm assuming it's not true.
It's just people talking out of sorts. These people, nobody's wrong here, except that they're all just full of shit. Like, people like this don't sue for, this would have to be some sort of tortious interference with contract or something. Like, you're trying to make hundreds of millions of dollars, and that's what's on the line. Like, Pacquiao's people probably just reached out to Conor, probably didn't even realize that he's under contract to the UFC. Like, I could easily see people who really know what's going on. I don't know who is, let me guess. Pacquiao is represented by Bob Arum or something like that, and that's why Dana's really pissed.
Probably.
Eh, whatever. Just go ahead and make that fight, people. Just make another dumbass fight that I don't want to see. I'm going to watch it, but...
Yeah.
I mean, the Floyd thing was fine. That was a one-off. It was weird. It was unique. Now Manny Pacquiao. Like, I don't want to watch Conor McGregor box. I don't watch boxing for a reason. It's fucking boring. And the novelty of Conor boxing is probably worn off by now. Unless he goes in there and does something crazy. This is going to lose again. It's going to probably look like exactly like the Floyd fight, only likely more violent.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something about McGregor that's been... Ever since he did the retirement tweet, thanks for the cheese, like, I've kind of lost a little bit of that luster for him. I still think he's the biggest draw ever in MMA. Like, I respect that. I respect what he's done in the cage. Like, I don't think he gets enough credit for that by any stretch. It's like, he destroyed the featherweight division. He beat Mendez. He beats Jose Aldo when he's unbeatable. He destroys Eddie Alvarez. He has the Diaz fights, which, you know, he wins one, he loses one. In the cage, he's great. Outside the cage, he's great. But it's just like his act is wearing thin on me now. And I find it kind of disingenuous early on where he's like, I predict these things, and he does it. Like, that was genuine. He was real. He's, you know, on the MMA hour eating blueberries and talking about how he has no money, and like, that shit's relatable. And now it's just like at another level where, you know, he's jumping the cage, he's pushing refs around, he's getting into bar fights with mobsters in Ireland and Dublin. It's just like, I don't know. Some of that luster has run its course, and it's just like, I'd like to see him fight again. Just get in the cage and fight, whether it's at 155, 145, if it's Diaz again, just fight again and shut up. That's just where I am at this point with McGregor.
Yeah, that's just it. I want to see him fight. I want to see him box. Right. I want to see him do something he's going to be competitive in, because that's what I like about him. I like that he's a fighter. I don't like, there's plenty of dickheads out there who just party a lot and get in bar fights. I'm not gonna like follow their lives, Dan Bilzerian or whatever. Like, they're doing it way better than Conor is, I'm sure. So like, I don't care about that shit. Like, it's interesting if I know he's gonna fight. But if he's just gonna box and he's not a fighter anymore, he's not even because he's not a boxer. He's just some sort of weird celebrity guy who happens to be, you know, competent at boxing. But it'd be like if I don't like Joe Rogan was talking shit all the time, but was only famous because he was able to box a little bit. That's a fucking terrible comparison. Just fight already, Conor.
I'm with you. I would like to see him fight Tony Ferguson. That'd be great. I would buy that show, and I think, I don't know, 1.9 million other people would buy it too, but we'll see.
I feel like you want to predict that it was 2 million buys, and you said 1.9 million other people will buy it. You don't count for 0.1 million of a buy.
2 million sounds like a lot for a Tony Ferguson fight.
Yeah, well.
1.9 sounds fair.
Okay.
I think coming off that boxing, like, if that did whatever, 6 million worldwide, 1.9 sounds fair. It would set the UFC record. But 2 million, I don't know. Tony Ferguson. Diaz. Nate Diaz, the trilogy, that might do too, but Tony Ferguson,
really, you're going to split hairs over 100,000 buys between Nate Diaz and Tony Ferguson? I think it's going to be I think there's a bigger difference between those two than 100,000 buys.
I agree. I'm saying the threshold, it could do 2 million plus. I don't know. I don't know until the week of.
And none of us do. And that's if Conor survives and doesn't get murdered by Brad Pitt or somebody.
On the topic of McGregor, his last opponent, Floyd Mayweather Jr., did some sort of, I don't know if it was Facebook or whatever, but he did one of those live videos where you can, like, do a selfie and talk into the camera. You don't know anything about those, do you?
Fucking sounds really narcissistic to me.
Sounds like something just, like, a loser would do, right?
Some asshole looking for attention.
Well, he is essentially saying, I'll read the quote verbatim, and this is coming from Floyd Mayweather Jr.'s mouth. You already know I'm a money-getting motherfucker. I'm Money May. They just called me not too long ago and asked me to come back. I can come right back to the UFC. If I want, I can go. I can come right back to the UFC. I can go fight in the octagon. I can do a 3 or 4 fight deal in the octagon and make $1 billion. Remember, I'm Floyd Money Mayweather, and you motherfuckers love me, and I love you motherfuckers.
I bet he can make $300 million in the octagon. I bet he can make $500 million. I could see it.
He's saying $1 billion. He's saying $1 billion between three or four fights.
I think he could easily have two fights or mega draws. After that, I think that the novelty would be gone, because who the fuck's gonna pay $100 to watch Floyd Mayweather lose in 30 seconds?
He went on to say, I'm so tough at what I do, they had to go to a whole nother barbarian sport to get a motherfucker that would try to fuck with me. And you already know what I did with that. Lights out, party's over, you can kiss the babies, it's bankroll. You know all I do is dress, flex, and progress. And you already know I went from the streets to the executive suites.
What the fuck? Is Billy, is superstar Billy Graham all of a sudden here? Like, what the fuck is this rhyming shit? And also, what is this whole crap about how, you know, I'm a money-making machine and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, you're not. You don't make money. You box and get paid a lot of money for it. But you don't actually make, like, you're not somebody who's out there investing all the time and doing these brilliant decisions. And you're not Warren fucking Buffett. You're an actual illiterate with a lot of money.
It's crazy. He's 40. It's like, just walk away. Like, he's the type of person who needs the attention. Like, if I made, I don't know, $1 million, I'd be good for a long time and just disappear and hang out.
I'd be gone for 50 grand.
Well, I'm just, like, I could live, my family and I could live off $1 million for, you know, years.
Oh, fuck. It'd be fine. My dad and I would always talk about, like, the most important thing to do if you ever win the lottery is not tell anyone. Like, I don't want people to know I'm rich.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. You just move, you buy a slightly nicer house, you invest the rest of the money, and you just don't tell anyone how you're paying for the house.
Oh, actually, I wouldn't invest shit. I would not invest a dime. I would fucking get all that stuff in, I don't know, gold or something. Cause I don't trust any of this shit. We're all going down soon.
You wouldn't buy a shit ton of Bitcoin?
I don't know if that's either gonna be the next step or... Nah, it's just gonna be some sort of bubble. It's gonna be fucking hilarious when people lose everything on it.
You would think. I don't know. I don't know anything about it.
It trades like a commodity, but it's not, it doesn't do anything. It's not inherently worth anything. It's just fucking computer code.
It's weird too, because you can't actually go and buy anything with it. There's no one that takes Bitcoin. I can't go to the supermarket and pay with Bitcoin.
Yeah, and I was reading about how that's one of the bigger problems, is that like even like Stream, the video game thing, they I guess stopped accepting it as payment because it's too difficult to so process volatile. And yet in the volatility of it, it's just insane. Like, yeah, it everybody's sitting there going, look, I'm getting rich, but that's not what the point is. The point is to create a new form of currency, and currencies only work if they're stable. Right now Bitcoin is, it's, people are investing in Zimbabwe dollars and hoping that they can sell those same Zimbabwe dollars when they skyrocket up in price in 5 months. It's fucking stupid.
Speaking of stupid, Nate Diaz is in the news again. On Friday, he sent out a tweet claiming that the UFC offered him a title shot in any weight class, but rather than accept that proposal, is moving on to the next sport for now. He then added a pair of boxing glove emojis to complete the message. He wrote on Twitter, UFC offered me title fight in any weight class. I'm cool with a K, though. I'll give them a shot when they do something good. On to the next sport for now.
Yeah, I'm glad that he tweeted out boxing gloves in case we thought maybe he was going to be like a skateboarder or video game player or something like that. Like, okay.
Like equestrian or something.
Oh, God, that'd be amazing. Nate Diaz on a horse. Oh, ho, 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 ho. He'd be having a cowboy head on. Well, giddy up, motherfucker. You guys don't like this shit. But, I mean...
Did you see the video of Roy Moore on the horse?
That's exactly what I'm thinking of right now.
It looks like, granted, he's probably ridden a horse a lot. He seems like the type of person who has. But it looked like he had never been on a horse before. Maybe I don't know what I'm looking at, but that horse was, like, out of control, like, flopping around, and he looked like he almost got tossed off of that thing.
I mean, he probably has been on a horse before. I'm guessing that all the, you know, press and everything there does fuck with a horse. However, Roy Moore is exactly the kind of asshole to pretend like he rides horses when he's never been on one.
Although, at the same time, I feel like the horse could have been scared shitless with all those people around with cameras and stuff. But you would think if you were experienced as a horseback rider, you probably wouldn't ride a horse into, like, a polling station to vote when you knew there was going to be hundreds of photographers around for the biggest, like, Senate election in the last 100 years.
Look at this way, though. If he'd fucking won, that would have been legendary. He rode in on a horse to vote. Like, when I saw that, I was just like, this really is exactly the playbook. It's like whoever ran his campaign watched the, I don't know, Caddyshack and rooted for the snobs. And it's like, that's what we do. We'll just get a horse.
You're talking about Bannon?
Yeah, basically. Like, is Bannon, yeah, it's just a Caddyshack. Like, it seemed like Blazing Saddles would do this. You know, like the clueless idiot. Like, they like horses here. Like, get on the horse. And it goes terribly wrong because he's a moron. And this is like a day after somebody said, you know, you don't need to swear in a stack of Bibles. And he just, the surrogate sits there for literally 6 straight seconds not saying anything. Or then after his wife talks about the Jew that they know. It's like, every single thing that came out was, honest to goodness, like, if you were in Hollywood and you wrote, this is how Hollywood writes caricatures of right-wingers in the South. Like, everything right about him. I couldn't fucking believe it. Just watching this, I'm just like, this is like if the Democrats ran a candidate who said, look, I'm going to have forced abortions, forced sterilizations. I'm going to take all of your guns and all of your money. We'd be like, you can't fucking do that. Be like,
Were you surprised more lost?
Not really. I was kind of surprised. It was, I don't know. I think I fail to appreciate sometimes how deep red states can be, because like, or even how deep blue states can be, because as blue as Illinois is, we do have a Republican governor right now. Like, we are willing to vote right for Republicans that at least come across as a little moderate.
Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. I mean, Massachusetts is considered, like, you know, the most, like, liberal state in the country, you know, first for gay marriage, first for healthcare, all that shit. And it's like, we've got a Republican governor, and, like, most of my lifetime, we've had a Republican governor. Like it's weird, and Scott Brown got elected from Massachusetts.
I think the real big liberal state is Hawaii. Like, those fuckers never have anything red.
Continental.
Well, I can't go with the, I'm not going to limit myself there. They are Americans, just like the rest of us, even though they're like the only state besides Texas and actually most of the South that wants to break away and be its own country. What the fuck is with America? Like, none of our states ever really want to be part of us. California wants to break away into 6 pieces or something like that. Hawaii always wants its freedom. Texas has it written in their constitution they can leave whenever they want. The South
doesn't seem like that would be a mistake, though. Like, can you imagine, like, Hawaii on its own?
They don't get,
would they be better off? Yeah. I can't imagine.
They would, they think they'd be better off. And they'd be like, look, they would be better off if they don't fuck up their shit. Like,
but think
like,
about any other, like, Pacific Island.
They'd be like Puerto Rico.
Affiliated with the U.S.
They'd be Puerto Rico. But
Puerto Rico's not doing so hard.
Well, yeah, but Puerto Rico fucked that up themselves. Like, they had every benefit you could want. They have all the protections of America, and they don't have to pay income taxes. Like, that's a pretty sweet fucking deal. Oh, they can't vote. Nobody gives a shit.
Right, but like, they've got, like, the shittiest electric grid of all time.
That's just because that's where that's because nobody should live in fucking Puerto Rico. Like, don't live in a fucking island in the middle of Hurricane Alley, their assholes. Like, nothing works there. Yeah, some of it's just stupid people or poverty or whatever, but I think a lot of it's just, you can't build anything there that will last. Nothing there lasts. At least Hawaii, like, the volcanoes haven't happened yet.
What will happen with Nate Diaz next? Will he box, or will he go back to UFC, or is he just never going to fight
again?
He's
going to fight.
If you had to guess.
He'll fight in the UFC.
Against?
Conor.
He's going to wait and get a Conor. You think Conor will come back to the UFC then? You're banking on that.
Yeah. Conor's got to be in the spotlight. I don't know if he's not going to fade away, but he's way too young. But he can't just keep doing boxing. He's got maybe one more boxing match, possibly two. Like, if he was to somehow miracle beat, like, De La Hoya or something, maybe to have another fight. But he's not a boxer. He's going to just keep losing, and that's not – I don't think he's going to be happy with that. And people aren't going to pay for that shit. And
you think he could beat De La Hoya?
No, but it's more conceivable than him beating anybody else. At least De La Hoya's old.
If I know, well, I'm saying maybe, I don't know, maybe he could beat
him. No, he's
De La
not gonna beat him. For fuck's sake, no. He wouldn't beat, I really, no, he would not beat I was trying to think, would he, could he beat, Roger Mayweather? I think he could beat him just because of the age. but technique-wise, he's not even close.
I know, just De La Hoya's old as fuck, right? How old is De La Hoya now?
I don't think he's 50 yet.
Let's find out. Oh, he's only 44.
Yeah, that's young. I mean, that's close enough to your prime that...
It's only 15 years away from your prime.
Well, given that Conor doesn't have a prime because he's not a boxer.
But, I mean, literally the last time I'm looking at now, De La Hoya fought was in 08, and he got destroyed by Manny Pacquiao.
Oh, no, there's a reason why it would be bankable, because there's enough chance there, but it's still a fucking Olympic gold medalist who's one of the greatest boxers ever against a dude who's had one boxing fight that he pretty much got tooled. Like, doesn't matter, like, if Barry Bonds right now could probably hit home runs off of most of the single A baseball players.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. How big is De La Hoya?
I think he's about 154. Okay. 154, 160. I think he's actually pretty much about the same size as Conor.
You don't think all the coke and stuff has done some damage?
No, Conor's okay.
Stupid. What else do we have going on? John Danaher says GSP not fighting again is a definite possibility. So GSP came back, he beats Michael Bisping, wins the middleweight title, and like an exciting fight, one that I marked out for and was a good show, and now he's saying not only does he have colitis and he doesn't want to fight at middleweight, but one of his coaches, basically his jiu-jitsu coach, John Danaher, is saying he may never fight again at all.
It's definitely possible. That's not a thing.
Anything is possible.
Yeah, definitely possible. Well, except for raising the dead. Yeah, shut up. I don't know. St. Pierre's such a fucking weirdo. He's one of those that if he never fought again, I would not be surprised. He's just weird. He's just gonna be happy doing gymnastics or some shit. He's gonna go out there and master the winter biathlon.
He seems like the type of person, though, that is probably decent with his money, too. Like, he's not a dumbass. He's not out partying. You don't see him with all these Lamborghinis and Ferraris and shit like that. And he keeps relatively quiet when he's not fighting. So maybe, you know, he had another $5 million, $6 million payday off that UFC Bisping fight, and he's good. He's good. You know, he was good before, and now he's got another $5 million in the bank.
But he reminds me kind of A-Rod in that there's these kind of athletes where they're always dressed very nice, and you could tell that they want to be somebody. Like, not Conor McGregor type of being somebody, but they want to be respected. Like, they understand where the real power is in the world, and that's who they want to respect them. And I could see George St. Pierre like wanting to get involved in something. I don't think he's got the brains or the anything for anything else. I don't know what he's gonna do with himself. But he's got a sore butthole, so what are you gonna do?
Danaher is saying, quote, "From what I understand, the standard medications for
fuck me, man. The Bulls are advertising that every Wednesday night at their games, their food is only wait a second. I just got really excited when I realized that they're advertising like our pizza, this and that. They're only $5.
Like, okay, that's a bad sign. That means your team really sucks.
I think it's also a really bad sign that both of us apparently hear, oh, a slice of pizza for $5 in a basketball game. That's really cheap. It's a slice of fucking pizza. It should be $1. Here I am marking out going, I can get some cheap pizza. Ugh. All I have to do is spend the $60 on tickets and $30 in parking, and then I can pay 5 times what I normally would for pizza.
You're a capitalist. You should like that.
I don't object to them doing it. I'm more laughing at myself for getting excited at, like, how stupid am I? Like, oh, look at that. I'm happy to pay more, but just not as much more.
Hey, it's what the market will bear, right? So Danaher went on to say, from what I understand, the standard medications for ulcerative colitis take some considerable amount of time to take effect, anywhere from 3 to 8 months, before you'll even notice any changes. We have to see how he reacts to his medication regimen and make a decision based on that. To me, it's like, at this point, GSP sounds like he, I don't want to say he's scamming everybody. I'm sure he's got some medical issues, but it's like he came back, he knew he could win that fight, and now he's done. Like, that's how this reads to me, and he's using this as a reason not to fight again.
That, or he's got that ability where, you know, those people that we see them all the time, sometimes on TV a lot, tweeting, where they can't help but say something stupid. Like, even if something's going right, you're just going, oh, you moron. Like, they're always undercutting themselves. St. Pierre always does that with injuries. It's like every single time. Like, his legacy is more about being injured than anything else. Even though he's got all these victories and looks spectacular, there's always this sense of he's not a fighter. He just needs to be, perfect, and he's just too much of an athlete. Now it's like, oh, I can't fight because I poop too much. Like, come on, man. Like, I know it's a real thing, but no, you don't. Chris Leben was high on drugs and he's fighting, and this guy's, you know, he's got to shit a little bit more than normal.
UFC 219 is going to be a test run for AI-inspired glove sensors. The Nevada State Athletic Commission approved a test run for a new UFC-approved product that uses analytics and artificial intelligence to tell the story of a fight. At UFC 219, select fighters will be equipped with glove sensors that measure everything from punch strength to stress. The data from those sensors will then be interpreted in real time using analytics and artificial intelligence. The UFC hope is to give fight fans a better understanding of what's really happening inside the cage with a new set of stats that can be shown during broadcasts. But first, the promotion needs to make sure the data is accurate and useful.
I mean, I know what they're going for. I don't know if it'll work. I have no idea how reliable the intel is from it. It seems kind of weird to think you can measure all that stuff without destroying the sensor, but I don't know. Like, that technology does crazy shit these days, so I guess maybe they can figure all this stuff out. If they can, then it seriously sounds like they're creating health bars from a video game. Like, you could just, like, go out there, like, if you're measuring the stress and the power and the everything of every punch, it's like, well, okay, we should be able to most, like, look at it and we should just make a fight and just say, look, if you get hit this many times by this much force, the fight's over. That's how much the brain can take. And then just erase to see who can hit the other guy more.
Right. Or you'll know who really has a good chin and who doesn't. You know what I mean? We talk about, like, Mark Hunt and all these guys who can take a shot, but we don't really know how hard those shots are or how well they connect or whatever. So it's interesting. I don't know what you do with that data or how it helps. I guess the guy who created the sensors says they produce 70 new insights about what happens during a fight. The sensors on the glove alone produce 12 different stories. There are sensors in the octagon canvas to measure movement and range, and even sensors monitoring a fighter's cornerman and his family members.
Okay, I think he's confusing sensors with just cameras.
The AI agent can beam all that information to fans via smartphone, and fans can tailor their information they want to see based on their preference for particular stats.
I think that this asshole just was like, oh, we gotta make sure we mention, you can use it on your cell phone too. It's like, yeah, dickhead, we know how stats work. We know how cell phones work. We understand that if there's information that's actually useful, we're gonna have access to it. Guess what? When I look at baseball stuff on my phone, oh, they have the stats. It's really easy to just put up a percent, like 5%, 12% on a phone. It's like the first thing a phone could do, especially a cell phone, would show like basic fucking numbers. Mm. Ooh, okay,
The one thing that'd be interesting to see is like comparing like Ngannou's punch to Mark Hunt's. Who has the hardest punch?
Oh yeah, that'd
like,
be really cool.
Connects. Like, that's interesting, because we always talk about who's the most powerful guy, who's got the best chin, or how hard do flyweights hit compared to bantamweights? Is there a big difference? Like, nobody really knows. I mean, we have a feeling. There's a reason there's weight classes and whatnot, but I'll be curious to see it, and if it works, or if guys are breaking it because they're punching so hard. Because those 4-ounce gloves are small, man. I mean, I'd be curious to know how those sensors work and what the technology is. Obviously, I'm an idiot and probably wouldn't understand it, but it's interesting. Something new.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm almost like. If these gloves can't protect your fingers from breaking, how are they going to stop components inside of the glove? Like, it's between the finger and the glove. Like, shit. Well, right. If the thing behind it breaks, I'm pretty sure the laws of physics say it's going to break too. But I think actually what concerned me, it's not even a concern, cautions me, is as a guy is a huge baseball stats nerd, I read a lot about that shit. I love it. This guy, when he's just talking there, and I kind of read one of the articles about it, doesn't sound enough like a nerd for me. Like when you're talking about like, well, we'd be able to use it to do this and this and this, and you can put it in your smartphone and blah, blah, blah. It's like, the real nerds just, they want to learn knowledge for knowledge. Like, they're not, like, this is the guy that wants to figure out how you can use it and all that stuff. That's more of like an artistic mindset. And I want this data needs to be collected by just dorks who are just like, what is the binary thing? How many feet per second did he punch? Blah, blah, blah. Does Mark Hunt's chin absorb this many, pounds of pressure per second, this is that, and does that actually matter, blah, blah, blah. This guy's like, I'm going to create a pretty graph for you on your phone. You probably have like a light up figure, and it'll just flash red when his head's been hit.
Someone who should have had a head that lit up red was Tim Haig. In Edmonton. He could have used these sensors, man.
I thought you were going to say Mark Hunt. Alive. Just because he ain't no...
Mark Hunt as well. He's got a fight coming up. We'll get to that in a minute. So I know we've touched on this before, and I kind of feel like it's an underreported story. Basically, Tim Haig is a former UFC fighter, had a lot of knockout losses, had a boxing match up in, I think it was Edmonton in Canada, and was knocked out and eventually ended up passing away due to head trauma. So Edmonton was investigating this, and the city council has passed a new bylaw that will stop the Edmonton Combative Sports Commission from issuing new licenses or event permits until December 31st, 2018, or until the council provides further direction. The provision will go into effect this Saturday. So basically, instead of addressing the issues and the reasons, they just banned MMA and boxing and kickboxing for a year. So saying, hey, why did Tim Haig get into the boxing ring and allowed to fight after having 5 knockouts in a year? Why was that even allowed? Said, just ban it, you know? Fuck it. We'll just ban it and we won't have any more issues.
What I like.
Which works, but isn't really the solution when the rest of your country and the world has MMA and boxing and kickboxing. And I also think like pro wrestling falls under their combat sports rules. So like indie wrestling shows have been banned as well for a year.
Like I know that the language is not really banned for a year, that they can show progress and they'll change it and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
But I think it's kind of, there's something really awesome about an athletic commission being suspended. Cause that's what it is. They've been issued, a 1-year suspension for inappropriate behavior. Like, just like a fighter. This is amazing. Except for the difference is they got a guy killed. So, I don't even know if you really need to suspend the athletic commission so much as, who in the right minds is going back to Edmonton to fight? Actually, a lot of people would because they're fighters and they're not in the right minds. But still, I'm the UFC. I'm not going there.
I mean, the UFC ran a show there not that long ago.
Yeah, I know.
Was it the DJ card where he fought, where he threw the guy up and caught the
arm? Was it that card? That was on a pay-per-view. No, the DJ did that. That's right. That was the main event. But it ended up being Amanda Nunes and Valentina Shevchenko.
That's right.
And it turns out that in that main event, they didn't have to worry about anybody getting hit in the head real hard.
The city council also motioned that the report on Hegg's death will be presented to Hegg's family, the council, and released to the public no later than December 14th, which would be tomorrow, however we want to term that. We anticipate the release of the report into the tragic death of Mr. Hegg and a continued conversation about the proper role of the municipality in the field of combative sports. The thing that's weird about all of this, and it always gets me, because Canada has a similar issue to the United States in that it's not run by, like, the federal government. Like, mm-hmm. It's not nationally sanctioned. And to me, that's a problem. In the States in particular, you got different rules in different states. What's a grounded fighter? I have no idea. It's different in every state. You got 2 hands down, 2 feet down, you're on a knee. Nobody knows. And it's like, that's one of those things that should be consistent in every state and probably every province in Canada. And this shit should be handled the same nationwide as opposed to having, you know, these half-assed rules between each state.
Yeah, like, for some of the things, if I say UFC, because if you run a show, 90% sure you can request more restrictive rules. Like, you know, yeah, you can't, because Strikeforce didn't have elbows. And so if I'm the UFC and I'm going to any commission that's adopted the new unified rules with the different definition of a downed opponent stuff, I would just say, sorry, but we don't want to use that rule right now. We want the more restrictive rule until you get it universal. Because we've seen way too many guys this year. I mean, goddamn, Musasi and Chris Weidman. That's a huge fight on a big card. And it got fucked up because nobody knows what the rule is. And this is a rule that involves getting kicked in the head. Like, this is the one kind of rule there should be no confusion. If there's confusion over weight cutting or what is a 12-6 elbow, this is, can I kick him in the head when he's down or not? Like, this is a big one, and they don't even have that uniform. So yeah, I've always thought the UFC makes a really good case for simply regulating itself, like that they should be exempt from athletic commissions. Because let's face it, they are the commission. They go into every town, and the town runs it the way they want to run it. We see that places like New York and all of Texas have no idea how to run shows. The UFC catches way more guys through USADA. There were way better athletic commission than the actual athletic commissions are. Plus, the UFC hasn't killed anyone. And that's a big positive when you're running a commission, is don't kill the fighter. That's like the first rule I think they have. Athletic commissions and doctors. The first rule is don't kill the person.
Quick shout out here to a guy named Mike Russell. I think he lives in Canada or whatever. I follow him on Twitter. Yeah, he is not an Ali Abdelaziz fan and is basically the only guy who found out he flew here on 9/11 and had terrorist connections and all this shit. The only person who reports on it or questions him about it, and like Ali totally discredits him and says he's a whack job or whatever. But he lives in Canada and has done a lot of work on this Edmonton thing. And he wrote on Twitter, the city of Edmonton refused to cancel UFC 115, which put $500,000 into the city coffers, in spite of a negligence death that they took 6 months to review, not investigate. Also, WWE is coming to town February 9th during the span. So, like, he's throwing Edmonton under the bus. Basically, they'll take these big money fights, but at the same time, they canceled a minor league MMA show this Friday. So shout outs to Mike Russell for actually kind of being a journalist.
Although, you know what?
Which is weird in MMA.
That's what they should do. Again, though, nobody's worried about a guy in the UFC dying from something like what Tim Hagg went through. Like, there's just, it will right. never happen. Somebody will die, but not like that. So same with WWE. Like, we're not worried about them. They're as protected as you could ever be. So yeah, cancel the shit little shows are being fought in the back of bars while some dude's just trying to hit on the 44-year-old single mom who's got 2 kids. And she's trying to relive the glory days a little bit, and she'll let him feel her up a little bit behind the jukebox, and that's his.
I mean, the argument though is though you allow the shows to run that are going to bring in a lot of revenue. It's the same thing in Nevada with Mayweather and Conor McGregor and these fines and letting fights go through. Like McGregor never even should have fought Floyd Mayweather. Like it was a farce, a 49-0 guy against a guy who's 0-0. It never should have been sanctioned. But when there's a lot of money on the line, they'll do it. If it was lesser fighters, they probably wouldn't.
Oh, for sure. And again, that's kind of what I think we want the laws to be. Like, again, laws like this. Like, any kind of law or regulation that exists to protect people from basically making harmful decisions. Not to, like, protect people from other people's, like, you know, murder and things like that. But this is, you know, we want these rules in place because we know that basically poor people can be exploited. And when everybody's getting paid $100 million, nobody's worried that anyone's going to be exploited. Nobody's going to send Conor McGregor out there to take a whole bunch of beatings and he's not going to benefit. Whereas Tim Hague got 50 bucks in a corn cob? Oh, I fucked that one up. I'm just going to stop.
Corn on the cob.
There you go. Is it corn on the, in a corn of cob? Cob of corn?
Corn on the cob.
Right, the corn on the cob is what you eat, but what do you call the fucking, just a stick of...
A cob of corn?
Yeah, isn't that a thing? To take home to eat later. I kind of want some corn now. Like right off of the, I really, really, really want to do just eat butter, like warmed butter, and that's a good, and salt, and that's a good way to get it to me.
Do you put pepper on your corn on the cob?
No, I don't even really eat corn that much, but when I have, it's because it's got a lot of salt and butter on it.
When you have corn, do you make it or does your mom do it for you?
I don't even know how to, what do you mean make it?
Like how do you cook corn on the cob? Do you boil it?
Oh yeah, my mom will boil it like Thanksgiving and shit like that.
You know how it's good? I'll do it with burgers a lot on the grill. You put the whole corn on the cob. You don't shuck it before. You put the whole corn on and it kind of steams on the grill in the whatever, the corn silk, whatever that crap is called, the leaves on the corn on the cob. And then you just take it off when you get inside. It's good that way.
Isn't it hot though?
It. Yeah, you put it on the grill.
Yeah, how do you take it off?
Well, usually like the end, I'll cut the end off and then all the leaves come right off.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Maybe I'll do that in the summer. I mean, I probably won't, but.
I'll send you a video of it.
Oh, there you go. I think I'm being mocked. Because my affinity.
Not really. I'm trying to give you some advice. I don't give you a lot of advice and sometimes you could use it.
I rarely need it, but I do appreciate the offer.
Can you tell me what happened 2 years ago this week?
2 years ago? Oh, Connor beat Jose.
Yeah, I leaked that information to you. Can you believe that's 2 years ago, though? Like, doesn't that feel like 5 years ago? That feels like ages ago. So much with Connor has happened in the last 2 years. I mean, he wins the featherweight title, beats Aldo, beats him in 13 seconds, spectacular win, does what he says he's going to do, becomes the top draw in MMA, arguably the best featherweight ever, coming off the Mendez win, he beats Poirier, he's on this hot streak, huge draw. Then it's like he's going to get this title shot against RDA. RDA breaks his foot, he has the Diaz fights. You know, he goes on to beat Eddie Alvarez, wins the lightweight title, goes on and fights Floyd Mayweather in the biggest fight of all time. It's like, Jesus, the Aldo fight was only 2 years ago. That feels like a lifetime ago to me.
It does, and I was just thinking now, I wonder if this is kind of like, for our parents and maybe our grandparents especially, how the shock of like 24-hour news must have been. You grew up with three channels and suddenly you have CNN, MSNBC, and Fox just going 24/7 and breaking news alerts and it's like, oh my gosh, what's going on? Whereas we're a little more used to it. And I wonder if what we're really experiencing is the world just speeding up so fast with, you know, Facebook and Twitter and all this stuff that if you're 14, this is just going to be normal. You're going to be used to being, oh yeah, I remember 2 years ago and this guy, nobody had ever heard of him and now he's retired and shit like that. Like it's just, that's how it works. We're just cycling people through so fast, but they're all making a ton of money. Like we're getting closer to everybody getting their 15 minutes, but this is going to be an actual literal 15 minutes.
So it was UFC 194 on December 12th at the MGM Grand Garden Arena. T-Mobile didn't even exist yet. Wasn't it? They probably had just started building it. Did a $10 million gate. $1,025,000 buys on pay-per-view. Listen to this main card, by the way. You've got McGregor defeating Aldo, Luke Rockhold winning the middleweight title over Chris Weidman, Yoel Romero beating Jacare, Damian Maia defeating Gunnar Nelson, and Max Holloway defeating Jeremy Stephens. What a fucking main card that
was.
Yeah,
that's a damn good show there. That's
the definition of stacked. Holy shit.
That was a big weekend. That was the same weekend that Rose Namajunas beat the shit out of Paige VanZant.
That's right.
God, that was great.
Even on the undercard, a couple names that just caught my eye. Warley Alves defeated Colby Covington by guillotine, and Leonardo Santos defeated Kevin Lee by TKO. Like, look at where those guys are now.
Yeah,
like, one's a fight away from a title shot, and one had an interim title shot since then.
Oh, yeah. No, this stuff, it's going to be like that for a lot of these shows, you know. Look, obviously some of these guys eventually become stars from the undercard, because that's where they all start. And sure. I'm looking it up right now. I got to find the fucking card. I'll know which fight it is when I see it. But it was, I remember UFC 66. And that was Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz. Part two. That was part two. And like, you look at this main card and it's Chuck versus Tito, Keith Jardine versus Forrest Griffin, Jason McDonald, remember him, versus Chris Lieben,
yeah.
Andre
Arlovski. Triangle. Yeah. He did a good triangle, I remember. Yeah.
Andre Arlovski fought Michael Bisping. But, this is the fight. I remember on the undercard, on the preliminary card, was Thiago Alves, Gabriel Gonzaga, and Yushin Okami.
Yeah.
And, it's like, at that time, they were nobodies. Nobody gave a shit about any of them. And, like, within 2 years, basically all of them had been main eventers. It was just like, oh, yeah, like, sometimes these cards have these guys that you're not really sure of, and then you go, oh shit, like the, what's his face, Cruz, the new light heavyweight that had a undercard fight on Fight Pass the other week. Like, that's what I kind of talked about him as, the way everybody's talking about it, you're going to, oh, like, and we're going to look back in a year or two and go, wow, look at this show, Brian Ortega fought against on the first fight of the night. Jeez, that must have been a really deep card.
Right. It's funny too, because that weekend they ran three shows that weekend, yeah. And really like pushed the envelope, and it worked at the time. That worked because it built momentum. And the first night, like you said, they had Namajunas versus Paige, Michael Chiesa versus Jim Miller, Sage Northcutt versus Cody Pfister. And that was the first night. You know what I mean? Yeah. Then the following night it was Edgar versus Mendez. So a huge weekend for them that really, really paid off. Tony Ferguson beat Edson Barboza on that second night.
Isn't that kind of weird to think that, you know, Ferguson and Barboza were fighting each other back then, and they're still in the same orbit. Like, they've not, one of them has not really separated from the other.
True. Yeah, to a degree. Yeah, especially if Barboza can beat the Dagestani.
That'd be a good fun. That, to me, that's the real main event of that show.
That was a big weekend 2 years ago. McGregor ascending the throne of MMA, I guess you could call it. Upcoming fights, we've got a few of them that we should talk about. Robert Whittaker versus Luke Rockhold is official for UFC 221 in Perth. That'll be for the middleweight title. Whittaker is now the undisputed middleweight champ since GSP relinquished the belt.
Did we talk about GSP relinquishing last week?
I think we touched on it. Yeah. I don't know if it was official, but yeah, GSP gave up the middleweight belt, and now it's Whitaker's no longer the interim champ. He becomes the real world champion, like Ric Flair in 1991.
It's fucking weird. They never needed
it. It's weird to me because Whitaker still feels so small for that division. Like, he beat Jacare, he beat Romero, like, he deserves to be there. But for some reason, I feel like Rockhold's so much bigger that Rockhold's just gonna, like, take him down and fuck him up.
I couldn't believe it, but did I see somebody that Rockhold's age was 31? That can't possibly be right. Like, I swear, like, I saw it as this, like, that's, there's no way he's that young.
I feel like he's 34.
So do I. I feel like he's way older. Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else, but if he's 31, he's going to be a beast.
He was born in October 1984, which makes him 33.
Oh, okay. Yeah, then he's actually still a little younger than I thought. Just because I felt like he was like 33 when he got in the UFC.
No, I mean, he debuted in the UFC in 14. I lied, 13. He lost to Vitor.
Maybe I'm thinking, I think it's because I get, him and Tim Kennedy kind of mixed up. Because they're both douchebags, and they're both from Strikeforce. And they both came over at the same time. And they both have, the same, weird douchey gripe with Dana, where it's you guys are oh, you're kind of upset about fighter pay, and you want more rights and this and that, but you want to be but I'm also a businessman who does this and that. It's how do you not know how a fucking business works then?
I just feel like Luke Rockhold's got the pretty boy thing going on, and he's stuck up and kind of douchey about it. Yeah. Like that California kind of surfer.
Him and Rory McDonald vacation.
Arrogant. For what it's worth, Rockhold's really good though. Yeah. I don't think he gets enough credit. He's fucking amazing. He's got two losses in the UFC. Otherwise he's 6-2 overall, but it's the Vitor loss was kind of flukish, that heel kick. I don't know.
Too.
Right. And again, if they fought 10 times, it's one of those, maybe Vitor wins three of them.
Yeah.
And then the Bisping loss was short notice, and he was reportedly hurt going into that fight. And you think if Bisping fights Rockhold 10 times, Rockhold wins 8 of them anyway. But he's got wins over Kostas Philippou, Tim Bosch, Michael Bisping, Machida, Chris Weidman, David Branch, Tim Kennedy, Keith Jardine, Jacare.
Oh, it's amazing.
Really freaking good.
He's beaten
and
everybody.
I feel like he could be a light heavyweight, I think, without much trouble. He somehow makes 185, but he's a big middleweight. I just feel like Whitaker's small for the division, and he's got some good wins. I don't discredit that at all, but I just feel like Rockhold's a true middleweight who's going to be too big and just kind of manhandle
him. I would think so, but again, like you said, Whitaker, he's pretty much got almost as an impressive a resume, especially recently. We'll see how – I think Whitaker may have it. I think there's something about him just – he gets in there and he fucks with guys. I think his style is a little difficult for them with the punching and everything. I know punching is an integral part of his game.
I mean, the other thing is, there's something about Australia. I don't trust Australian fighters for whatever reason. I'm always going to favor the American for whatever reason, and that might just be...
It's logic.
Yes, I was going to say xenophobia.
No, you're playing the odds.
Right. But again, you've got Whitaker, who's, listen to this streak, Mike Rhodes, who cares, Clint Hester, Brad Tavares, Uriah Hall, Rafael Natal, Derek Brunson, Jacare, and Yoel Romero. That's a good run, man. He's 8-0 in his last 8 against pretty good guys, to a certain degree, world class Yoel Romero, Jacare Sosa type people.
Anybody else lost to Court McGee?
Right, that's what I'm saying. Granted, that was 4.5 years ago now, but...
It doesn't really matter. And I think the story for me is that Rockhold really should be a way bigger star than he is. And I think I think it's all on him.
He's smarmy.
He's smarmy, and he got injured at the wrong time, and he just couldn't quite build the momentum, and... he really is Rory McDonald-like. With this whole I'm kind of a model and I'm doing this and that, and it's just you're wearing tucked in silk polo t-shirts and shit like that. It just looks awkward. And you're drinking white wine out of a flute. He's a guy that if you saw him, he'd be like, oh, what a fag. Look at you. Oh, he spends a lot more money on his haircuts than he really needs to.
Hey. He's got the money. Also, in upcoming fights, we've got Mark Hunt is back officially. He's going to be fighting Curtis Blaydes at UFC 221 in Perth, which makes sense because he's from New Zealand. I guess it's sort of close, but it's probably several thousand miles away from New Zealand.
No, it's
Perth?
50 miles.
Isn't Perth on West Coast?
First of all, Perth is in Australia.
Right. Hunt's from New Zealand. Right.
Oh, I thought you were saying, anyways, I don't think Australia is several thousand miles across. Well, maybe it is, actually. Yeah, I guess, I was thinking.
Hang on.
I honestly thought you were saying that Australia was several thousand miles away from New Zealand. And I was like, well, you dumbass. And then when I realized halfway through my sentence, I'm like, eh, let's see if I can go with this. Can I dig myself out of this hole? By the end of the sentence, I'm just like, nah, not even close here. I'm going to take this one on the chin. I bet Australia is at least 3,500 miles across.
Google Maps. We'll do, what do you want to do? Auckland to Perth? Auckland, New Zealand. Directions.
I would picture New Zealand looking like an octagon.
Perth, Australia.
Where's Auckland located? I mean, New Zealand's not really that big, so.
I just picked Auckland. It was the only town I could think of. It's a 6-hour flight. How many miles?
6-hour flight should be pretty much you to LA, so that'd be about 3,500.
You can't drive there, shockingly. It's not telling me the miles. How many miles? Fucking thing. God damn it, Google. It's just telling me it's 6-hour flight.
Yeah, and that's about 3,500 miles. Like,
okay.
Google New York to LA. That's a 6-hour flight, right?
Yeah, roughly.
So it's about the same distance. I guess it's about the size of the United States.
How many miles from Perth to Auckland? Huh. Google's cool. 3,325 miles.
Fuck, I'm good.
Well, you're not really, because you were claiming it was 50 miles away initially.
I was claiming that New Zealand and Australia were 50 miles away.
Anyway, Mark Brain, no brain damage Hunt versus Curtis Blades is a fight. Hunt wanted Verdum next, but he got Curtis Blades instead. Bit of a downgrade, I would say.
If you're gonna keep fighting, you might as well fight a guy who only really is known for hitting hard. So yeah, that's good. That's good for the old noggin there.
Yeah, he'd be better fighting Verdum, who's, you know, known for his ground game. Also, we've got, Shevchenko versus Priscilla Cachoeira at UFC Belém on February 3rd.
Oh, Belém, yeah, in Brazil.
The only reason I mention this is because Shevchenko's moving down to 125, and she'd probably be immediately the number one contender at flyweight, you would think, coming off, you know, a title fight at bantamweight.
Well, she'd have to leapfrog
Roxy?
I was just doing a dramatic pause. There's no one. There's nobody in the fucking division. Yeah, they should just give her the title. Just strip what's-her-face, Nico Montano, and be like, look, the reality show's over. This is a farce. We're going to give it to a real fighter.
That would be nice. On Friday night, December 15th, from the Metro Radio Arena in Newcastle, England, we've got Bellator. It's McDonald versus Peter Legere. I can't find the number of this one, though.
Wake up, asshole. Nah, I got nothing over here. These guys are asleep. They're union. They get a break.
All right, I'll look it up. 191. Bellator 191. Michael McDonald's Bellator debut at bantamweight. He was like a top five guy at bantamweight in the UFC for a long time. A lot of people don't know the name, but he got into the UFC really young and looked really good and had some good fights, some good wins, but could never really get over the hump and had some injuries and didn't fight a lot toward the end of his run. I also know he's really, super religious, like a Bible thumper. He may even be like a virgin or something. I don't know what's going
Wait,
on
who?
With him.
What?
Michael McDonald.
Oh, sorry.
Not the singer.
I was thinking Rory McDonald in my head. I'm going, that doesn't sound right at all.
No.
Oh yeah, Michael
Rory
McDonald.
Rory McDonald probably.
This
murders
whole,
women and
this
stays
whole
up.
Whole time, I thought you were talking about Rory McDonald.
Michael.
I was really
Michael,
confused.
Michael McDonald is only 26
He's
right
so
now.
So fucking good. I remember.
He debuted in the UFC in 2011.
And that was in Seattle on the undercard of Nogueira fighting, I can't remember who, Phil Davis. And I just,
good job.
I just remember, yeah. I was in Iowa City when that fight happened. I remember watching him fight and I was just like, what the fuck is this? Cause he was like 19 years old and he had this ridiculous boxing. I was just like, oh shit, this guy's gonna be he's gonna be at the top level. And then he fought for the title. So I was once again right, even though you'd have to be like one of like five people. That's like a deep, deep track there, man. Like, it's a deep cut, I would say.
A deep cut on an album that was never released.
No, it was on Five Star Radio, I'm sure.
But, yeah, great fighter. One of those guys that UFC just kind of let go because he didn't have much of a name and wasn't. I think he asked for his release and got his release, if it serves me. His last fight was against John Lineker. He lost by knockout. That was in Sioux Falls back in 2016. So it'd be interesting to see what McDonald's got left in the tank. Granted, he's only 26, but he's got 21 fights under his belt and, I don't know.
He likes to,
nine of them in the UFC.
He likes to work with wood.
What?
Yeah, he's like a full-time, like, not carpenter, but some sort of like wood craftsman. Like, he really enjoys doing it to the point where he's like, yeah, I could just stop fighting, just do this.
Yeah, he's the only thing I know about him is he's super religious. Like, he'd vote for Roy Moore, no problem.
Probably, yeah. He's kind of got that. Oh, I'm just substituting my faith for not wanting to go to school vibe to him.
In the semi-main event, we've got Valerie Letourneau versus Kate Jackson. So Letourneau's also a fighter debuting in the UFC. Jesus Christ. Debuting in Bellator, coming from the UFC. And she's fighting at flyweight, so.
No one will care.
Okay, and then we've also got the return.
I doubt anyone cares.
James Thompson?
Holy shit, I do care.
He's fighting Philip DeFries.
I care about this a lot. That's amazing. Where did I find? I thought he was dead.
No, he's 38, still alive. He's still 6'5", reportedly. His last fight was in 2015, so he's been on vacation for 2 years. It was in Ryzen, where he lost by TKO to Tsuyoshi Kasaka.
Oh, Tsuyoshi.
Prior to that, he lost to Bobby Lashley by TKO.
God, that was awesome. I remember him and Don Fry. I can't believe they're both still alive. Like, I would have.
Don Fry almost died.
I would put even money on Fry being dead by now. Although, maybe he's just gonna live forever. I bet he's.
He's a tough bastard.
I bet his life is awesome. I bet, like, he wakes
Don
up.
Don Fry's?
I bet, like, he wakes up down there in Arizona, and he just, like, he probably, like, has sex with men sometimes, but he does it in a real manly way. And he's wearing a cowboy hat, and he's just drinking beers, and, yeah, playing pool and shit like that. Yeah.
Remember he was doing some, like, preview videos for shows? Like, they had, like, really good production. I don't know if it was his wife, but she was, like, lighting cigars for him, and he was talking about Ronda Rousey and stuff.
Yeah, he had that, like, on the MMA show on Access, I think, was showing some of that. But it was kind of, like, it was funny, and it was kind of interesting once, maybe twice.
Right.
But after that, it's like, oh, yeah, the irony is that I'm just bored now.
He was, like, I want to say on, like, death's door, but he was hurting there about a year ago. I'm trying to figure out what was wrong with him, but I'm not seeing it here. But he was, like, in the hospital for, like, over a month, I think, about a year back. But whatever. He's still alive. So is James Thompson. He's fighting on Friday night for Bellator in England, of all places.
It is a place.
It is. So that's your Bellator preview. Mm. Then on Saturday night, we've got a UFC on Fox card. This is Lawler versus Dos Anjos. Since the guys are asleep over there, this is actually UFC on Fox number 26, if you can believe it or not. This is going to be in Winnipeg, Canada at the Bell MTS place. In the main event, we've got Robbie Lawler versus Rafael Dos Anjos in a welterweight fight. The winner of this is in the mix for a title shot against Woodley. I mean, the other person's Covington. If this is like a snoozer and it goes to decision and it's boring and it's tight, maybe Covington jumps the line, but I would say the winner of this is the rightful number one contender.
God, I have to look. It seems odd to me that Covington could, like, even be close to, like, earning a title shot. Because I think of him as really having just talked his way into it.
He has.
But, you know, if this is the other alternative, I can't believe Dos Anjos is doing this well. You know, like, he's one of those guys that's kind of like, with this increased time period that we're living in, in Trump time, I don't really, like, appreciate what he's done. Because it's like, oh yeah, he has beat a whole bunch of fucking dudes. And he's just like, he's schooling them. And if he could beat Lawler, I guess he could fight, like, Stephen Thompson. But that's almost it. I mean, I'll see that when Carlos Condit returns, and if he wins, that'll add some very much needed depth to the division. But yeah, you know, we're also seeing just a change in the guard with new guys. We got, I know on the undercard is Mike Perry, and he's a badass who's like openly begging for Darren Till, which nobody else is. So that'd be cool. So yeah, maybe it's time for the Deadwood to die. Already.
I mean, Dos Anjos has the win over Safadine and Magny. The Magny one was super impressive. He got that submission like in the first round or whatever. And Robbie Lawler's the number two ranked welterweight in the world behind Stephen Thompson. So
I mean, the Lawler win is what
I don't think Dos Anjos' resume is great, but if you beat Lawler, the only person ahead of you is Stephen Thompson, and Thompson's coming off two losses to Woodley, so Thompson's kind of out of the question at this point.
Fuck, they have fucking Thompson do it again. Jeez, my gosh. I mean, just...
Or they could go Covington. I mean, lower down, like in the lower top 10, there's some good guys. There's younger guys.
They could do Condit. If Condit looks impressive in his return, I could see them just throwing him in there. Because at least they fought before. There's a little bit of a story. And it is a pretty... It's a good name. And it should... It's a guy people want to see fight. You know, if Condit's going to kill himself, I'll pay for it.
I mean, the only question, though, is coming off... If Condit beats Magny, is that enough to give him a title shot?
Yeah, just because he's got the pedigree. He fought for the title.
I'm just thinking, I just can't get past that Maia loss. Maia destroyed him, you know?
But it's, you know, you look at the division. I don't know. Like, Stephen Thompson, Dos Anjos, maybe. Covington, maybe. Like, none of these guys are they sitting there and you're going, oh yeah, I can't wait to see that. Like, that's definitely the guy. It's just a bunch of dudes or repeats and, damn, all we're gonna do is have repeats of boring fucks.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The other one is if Lawler beats Dos Anjos, are you gonna run back Lawler Woodley?
Yeah.
Like, it's a weird,
that one I would
it's in
sure.
a weird place.
Because Lawler will have had, presuming he beats Dos Anjos by knockout, even if he doesn't, like, he'd have two very good wins in a row. And that Cerrone win was, you know, just an awesome fight. And he is a former champion. And he hasn't had a rematch. Yeah.
True. Okay. I'm okay. In the semi-main event, you've got Ricardo Lamas versus Josh Emmett, who's really jacked up for featherweight.
I don't give a fuck.
Emmett's a late replacement. Lamas was supposed to fight Aldo, but Aldo moved to the Holloway fight, and he got wrecked there. So Emmett's a biggest fight in Josh Emmett's career, but nobody knows him, and he's not even ranked in the top 15 now in the featherweight division.
And Lamas is—he's good, but he's never going to be a champion. He's just not, and I think he's going to very quickly be a gatekeeper. He's just—I don't think he's that good.
He's the bully.
Ooh, there's like five bullies in the UFC.
It's like the pit bull.
Someone should be called the pit bully.
That's pretty good.
I know.
I'm a mark for wordplay. Prior to that, we'll see Santiago Ponzinibbio versus Mike Perry. Mike Perry's awesome, and Ponzinibbio looked good against the guy from Iceland there.
Gunnar Nelson.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to the main event a lot, but this is, Mike Perry really won me over with his last performance. So this is like number two for me on this show.
Yeah, and Ponzinibbio's look good. I mean, he's ranked 10th and, Where is Mike Perry's not in the top 15, which seems odd.
Not yet, but he will be.
No, but he seems like he could, like, he could be ahead of Gunnar Nelson or Yancy Medeiros.
He's won fights, but he doesn't have like those big names yet.
No, I'm with you. I'm just surprised, because sometimes if you can build your name and get some hype behind you, you just automatically get ranked. I mean, he's got a win over, I guess it's Jake Ellenberger and Alex Reyes in his last two, which I guess isn't super impressive, but to be ranked 15th doesn't seem like it's that challenging.
Apparently it is.
I guess so. In a light heavyweight fight, we've got Glover Teixeira versus Misha Cirkunov. Glover's old, and I don't know if Misha's had dinner with Dana lately.
Well, I do have Glover Teixeira penciled in as, I think, either the runner-up in the Bellator Openweight Grand Prix next year. So I think that he'll get a win here. I'm guessing it's the last fight in his contract, and he heads over to Bellator.
I lost where I was.
Jan Blankovic versus Jared Cannonier. Julian Marquez versus Darren Stewart, no one cares. Chad Laprise versus Galor Bofondo, which is a fucking...
Oh, that's a guy who... A remember him? Name. He threw that dude down and knocked him out.
Remember that? I want to see that now. That looks good. Tim Elliott and Pietro Manga. John McDesi and Abel Trujillo. I can't believe Abel Trujillo still fights. Also, I'm going to make some comment at some point about how his eyes... He's got like this weird, like, the eyes of a model. And I always feel really gay for saying that, but I always notice it. Ooh, and Jordan Mean versus Eric Silva. That's a pretty good fight on Fight Pass there.
To me, that screams two guys who never lived up to their potential.
Yeah, exactly. I want to see them beat each other up and win my love.
Yes. That's all I've got for MMA. You want to move on to stuff real quick?
Yeah.
All right. So, obviously, the big news yesterday was our... friend Judge Moore not winning the Alabama Senate race. It's the first time there's been a Democrat senator since 1992 in Alabama.
Do you know who that was?
I don't know. No, tell me.
The current senior Republican senator from Alabama, who's considered a very hardline Republican.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Things change, man.
Hey. People change their mind, you know? Yeah, what? But, we kind of touched on it already, but obviously that's the biggest news. Do you have any takeaways from it? Is this like a referendum on Trump, or is it just Roy Moore being a disaster as a candidate? How does somebody like him even get nominated?
All it is the Democrats bragging about being infinitesimally more popular than a pedophile.
Right.
That's it. Like, we've shown that, okay, this is what it is. If the Democrats ever want to win in Alabama, they have to have the single worst candidate ever. Like, I've never heard of a major candidate this bad. Every single fucking thing you could do. Anti-Semitic, racist, doesn't like women, likes little girls. Just what the fuck? This crazy shit. And the sad thing is, like a lot of that stuff was known ahead of time, but he really fucking went for it. Like, if they had given a shit about him, maybe someone would have been able to. Thing is, nobody liked him. He didn't win when he won like his Supreme Court stuff. He didn't win it very big. The Republican establishment didn't like him, but even guys like Trump didn't support him in the primaries. Like, Trump clearly supported him at the end, being like, I'll do something here. But like, this was not a Trump guy or anything like that. And look, I actually have this theory that it's possible this election fucks the Democrats, because I saw on CNN last night and they were talking about how, well, you know, maybe the Democrats may want to invest money and this could put Arizona and Nevada in play and this and that. And I'm like, oh, that's where your mistake's gonna be. You're gonna spread yourself too thin, and you're gonna think that you've got broader support than you do. And it's exactly why Hillary lost, because she thought she had Wisconsin and some of the other states, so she didn't visit them. And all she had to do was shore up her shit, but they weren't there. They had this idea of like, this sea change. It's like, just win your shit. Trump's going to win because he keeps pleasing his base. In a hyper-partisan world, man, the dude who just says, yeah, I'm going to build a wall that's got 10 feet taller, motherfuckers. And we're all like, well, that's a normal thing now for the President of the United States to say. It's a normal day when the mayor of London doesn't want him to show up. Shit happens, man.
I just felt like in the past, primaries were designed to weed out, like, the whack jobs and get, like, the mainstream candidate who's going to get the most votes and win for the party. Until Trump, that is. And it's like, how did Moore even get past Luther Strange and get to that point? Like, I didn't follow it, the Alabama race, close enough to know the answer to that. But it's like, who in the Republican Party thought he was the person to, like, lead Alabama?
The Donald Trump factor.
Out of every Republican in Alabama, he was the best one to be senator? Like, what? I can't imagine what they were thinking.
Well, they weren't. Again, the party didn't want him. Mitch McConnell didn't want him. Donald Trump didn't want him. The other senator in the state didn't want him. Like, nobody wanted him. Like, Roy Moore, in the primary, now, once you get to the general because of the molestation shit, that's a different dynamic. But in the primary, I think a lot of what the vote was essentially people just saying, yeah, fuck you, we're just going to do crazy shit. If there's a movement out there, it's this feeling of, fuck it. I'm tired of this. Like, whatever's happened, I think everybody looked around, and I kind of wonder if it's like this letdown after 8 years of hope and change, and everybody looks around and goes, shit's kind of the same. Like, right. If nothing's going to transform, let's burn this motherfucker down. And I think you've seen that everywhere. I think, you know, the Democrats are getting more partisan, and, you know, the Republicans are getting crazier, and I think we're due for a big old civil war soon. Something bad's gonna happen, especially in my lifetime.
Then there was another story that I felt like it got underplayed. Maybe it was on your radar more than it was on mine. The story about, Representative Trent Franks. Did you see this story? like there's all weird. These like sexual assault stories and allegations, and this one was one that I had never seen. So this rep, where's he from?
Arizona.
A lot of people coming out of Arizona lately. But this guy, Trent Franks, announced Friday that he would resign from Congress immediately after accusations emerged that he had offered $5 million dollars to a female employee to be a surrogate mother for his children, and that she and another female employee worried that the lawmaker wanted to have sex as a means of impregnating them. Like, I can see, although I don't condone it, like, trying to bang people you work with or whatever, but the reason you give them is that you want to impregnate them so they can have your kid. Usually a surrogate mom uses, like, the egg from the wife of, you know, Trent Franks, and you put that into the woman and she carries the baby for you. You don't bang the other woman and have a kid with her.
This is I don't understand this one at all. I think this is like, I
mean, either
like, I have a feeling this is really good damage control, because just quickly he's gone. Like, there's no debate, just, he's gone. I think he's, must be like a nobody in Congress, really. Cause right. The whole thing, it doesn't, at first glance, I'm like, this doesn't sound like it's, like, the normal sexual assault shit and harassment we've been seeing. It's like, you would not ask somebody to literally be the mother of your children if you weren't somewhat close to them. I can't imagine, like, anybody would ask, you wouldn't ask a stranger, like, hey, you, want to carry my semen? Just want to go for it? So I felt like they must have known each other or something, but then I'm thinking.
Yeah, she worked for
but
it,
I mean,
yeah.
Like, it feels like, again, you'd have to be close to somebody. You don't just ask anyone. That's when I started thinking, maybe he's, was trying to, like, save himself on a joke, and it was like, or that's what he really said, like, I want to put a baby in you. I mean, you know, for artificial insemination with my penis or something. And that's
smooth.
And his excuse was, oh, I was looking for a surrogate mother or something like that. And like that's, cause that sounds like the spin way you would say that.
Maybe. It just sounds bizarre to me. A House leadership aide confirmed that two aides in Mr. Frank's office believe the congressman was suggesting that he impregnate them sexually. Andrea Lafferty said that one of the women approached by Mr. Franks told her about the encounter last year and said that Mr. Franks entreated her repeatedly to be a surrogate mother, at one point offering her $5 million.
I mean, none of this makes sense. $5 million? That's not the kind of money you offer for a surrogate mother. That doesn't make any sense. Like, you see the show on TV, it's like 20 grand or something like that. And even if it's not that, I know it's not $5 million, because if it was, I would just be a horn on my mother or something like that. Like, that doesn't make any sense. And also, two women said this. Do you say it at the same time? Like, again, if you're going to have a surrogate mother, you have a surrogate mother, not mothers, plural. So, I don't know. This is just, something's really weird here. And again, it's so quiet, and it's just, it's done. Like, this is how you kill a scandal. You don't pull a Roy Moore. You don't pull an Al Franken. You don't do anything. Just like, you're just like, okay, you're done. And the guy's gone.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Frank said in a statement that he had discussed surrogacy with two previous female subordinates because he and his wife, who have struggled with fertility, wanted to have a child, and that he regretted if those conversations caused distress. He denied intimidating or coercing the women and blamed the media climate for what he felt would be an unfair investigation. Franks and his wife have two children, both born by surrogate.
Okay. So he knows how surrogacy works. He knows apparently where to find people. So I don't know if he had to go to these chicks necessarily. But I feel like if you're going to ask someone to be the surrogate to your baby, doesn't that feel like something you and your wife do together with somebody, like at a dinner table or at a restaurant, like for dinner? Wouldn't you be like, hey, Janice, as you know, Mary and I have been, we've been trying, we don't think it's going to happen. And the doctor said we should reach out to those that we trust the most to talk about surrogacy. I know this is weird. I know it's uncomfortable. You didn't ask for the, I'm not saying, you should give me an answer now, but just maybe think about it. And then he's over there being like, I want to have sex with you. Whichever one of you wants it. With both of you. I want twins.
It's a weird one. Could you do that? Like, out of all these stories, this is the weirdest one because most of them are basic. They're just gross dudes who want to bang women. Yeah. Like, I'm not saying that that's okay, but it's kind of normal. You don't hear this story of somebody using the excuse that I want to have a surrogate baby with you, because that's not even how it works. It's so stupid.
Yeah, I was wondering, if you have two surrogate mothers, if you were to take two eggs from your wife and plant one in each mother, and you fertilize both of them, would those kids be twins?
No, because I think the original egg has to split or something.
No, you could have,
identical.
That'd be fraternal twins.
Fraternal. Yeah.
Would that be, could you have fraternal twins that way?
I have no idea. I don't know how that works. Usually I think you would put the sperm and the egg together and then.
Well, either like way. It doesn't really matter with the sperm, but like, if you have two eggs.
Yeah. You just. Two fertilized eggs.
And two different women.
I don't know. I don't know how that works.
I should look into that.
Yeah, Google that. You'll get some interesting responses, I'm sure. The viral video of the week was an 11-year-old bully kid named Keaton Jones. I assume you've been following the story.
Uh-huh.
So apparently this kid, somewhere down south, I forget where, I want to say Alabama. Tennessee, whatever. Basically, his mom videotaped him in the car crying, bawling his eyes out about being bullied. and all these celebrities came out. Justin Bieber, athletes, Dana White tweeted them. They're all inviting them to stuff, telling them it's okay, fuck bullies. This big anti-bullying campaign. He gained a ton of press. This thing probably got millions of views. And when you watch it, you legit feel bad for the kid.
I totally understood why he got bullied, just looking at him. My first thought was, I'm like, well, you are kind of weird looking. Like, did you get hit by an iron?
Knoxville. He lives in Knoxville, Tennessee. Home of Kane, I believe. We don't really know why he was bullied or what happened, but they dumped milk on him, and he said they put his hand up his shirt or something, whatever.
Played with his big fat titties.
Everybody took it at face value and assumed kids were being a jerk to him. Fair enough. And then all these celebrities reached out to him, like even like Justin Bieber, the biggest star on earth, like reached out to him and said he wanted to hang out and be friends with him. A bunch of fighters did as well. Donald Trump Jr. is tweeting him, and he's going back with Dana White and all this stuff. But it turned out that there was apparently more to the story. Apparently his mom has a ton of pictures on Facebook with like Confederate flags, and she's talking shit about Colin Kaepernick and standing during the national anthem. And one of the rumors was that this kid Keaton got bullied because he used like racial epithets.
I think that's a complete 100% rumor, by the way.
I don't know.
Think that like people just saw the photo of his mom with the Confederate flag and immediately were like, how can we make this so that he's not, like, he deserved it? Like, I think they just were like, oh, no, he used a racist term and he got bullied. Because, no, he didn't. Like, that's not what fucking happened.
I have no idea. It could be all legit. I don't know. I'm just saying what's out there. And then Joe Schilling, a kickboxer and Bellator fighter, posted a video where he was talking about an interaction where he had with the mom, and the mom DM'd him on Twitter and said they were looking for money and didn't care about meeting him and going to a Bellator card. So that added fuel to the fire. I guess to me the bottom line is nobody knows what the truth is. But if your kid's crying and bawling and upset, maybe you shouldn't record it and put it out on social media.
That was my first thought. I was just like, what the fuck? Why would you do this to your kid? Like, first of all, you should be comforting your kid. This seems like you're almost mocking him. Also, this is going to make it way worse. Like, holy shit, can't show your kid being a little pussy on the internet? He's gonna get bullied left and right. I don't give a shit if all these fucking celebrities are his friend for a couple weeks. All the kids are like, that's really cool. Next year, he's still gonna be a weird looking kid, and he's still gonna get bullied. Now, if all these people reaching out to the kid, you know, fuck most of them too. Even fuck Joe Schilling. So what if his family are crazy nut jobs? I don't actually know if they're really racist. Somebody's like, oh, his uncle might be a white supremacist and this and that, blah, blah, blah. I don't trust any of this shit anymore because they called me a white supremacist. I don't know what people's standards are anymore. Just because you have a Confederate flag and don't like Kaepernick, you're not a white supremacist. It means you're like my uncle. He didn't have a Confederate flag. He's probably a little racist, but he's still a doctor. But to me, it's like, this kid is way too young to be anything. He's just a little dumb kid in school. If you feel bad because he's getting bullied, and I do on some level, you should also feel bad for the fact that his mom is apparently a bitch who videotapes her child and puts it on the internet. Don't just start retracting your support and like all this shit because then you're like, oh, well, the family isn't very good. Well, who gives a shit? Like, I was going to say Hitler's kids. Hitler didn't have any kids. Goebbels' kids still needed to eat, and they're still children. Like, we don't, like, as a matter of law, we don't hold children accountable for the sins of their parents. Like, the kid's being bullied, and you think he needs a pick-me-up? You give it to him, and you don't give a fuck who his parents are. If you find out his parents are dicks and you withdraw your support, well, fuck you. You don't give a shit either then. You're just out for publicity, and you revealed yourself to be a whore. A whore for likes and thumbs up.
Yeah, I mean, I think the argument is the mom put it out there to get money.
Oh, I know. I get that. I can see if you don't want to donate, that's fine. But, you know, giving little kid free trips and shit. Worst case scenario is a little dorky 9-year-old kid gets to go to Bellator or whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't sound that bad. I mean, the kid did an interview on CBS where he said the video was his idea. Although, I mean, you gotta wonder how much an 11-year-old can decide how much of an impact a video of him crying is gonna have on the internet.
Are you kidding me? We fucking I Am Jazz is a fucking reality show about an 11-year-old boy on hormone blockers to become a girl. If we can let that shit happen, we can let this kid say put his shit on YouTube.
True.
At least it's not a dick pic. It's like the new version of that the original viral video, the first one ever, that kid with a lightsaber. Like that shit's gonna haunt this kid forever.
That was a good one. You seem to stay up on Google Trends. They released today their top searches worldwide for 2017. If you had to guess what the number one search for thing Trump. In 2017 was, no.
Or
you know what? I think this. Hang on a second. Let me get exactly what this is. I think this is based on the increase from 2016.
Oh, okay. Then Weinstein? Because Weinstein would have to be the biggest increase. Otherwise, I would go with, like, rape or dotard or big or something like that.
Dotard's a good guess.
Dotard was one of the Oxford Dictionary's, like, most searched for words.
Google posted its top results in the U.S. and globally on a special website, google.com 2017. The number one search worldwide was Hurricane Irma.
Fuck. That doesn't sound right. Gives a shit.
It was
a hurricane and all, but it really wasn't like that big of a deal. Maria did more damage.
Maria
destroyed an island.
Alleged sexual assaulter.
Yeah, okay. There's no way most people can spell any of those words. Alleged sexual assaulter.
No. You're supposed to guess which one.
Oh, Spacey.
No.
Didn't have to be Weinstein or Trump.
Nope.
Alleged sexual assaulter. They got more than Weinstein or Spacey.
You talked about him on your show.
I'm sure. Oh, Bill O'Reilly? No.
Uh-uh.
What's a big ass high profile?
He had a weird button to lock people in his rape room.
Matt Lauer? Really?
Yeah, Matt Lauer, number two.
I also don't believe people can spell Lauer. That's wrong with Spacey over Weinstein. Because I figured Spacey was easier to spell than Weinstein.
Number three was a rock star who died this year. I'm putting you on the spot.
Chester Bennington.
Ooh, that was a good guess, but Tom Petty.
Oh, I was gonna go Bennington or Cornell, and I went with Bennington because I figured he appealed to a younger crowd. There's more likely to use computers.
Okay, I like your thinking. You put some time and thought into that. Number six is Mayweather versus McGregor fight.
That's pretty big.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Number six for searched item in 2017 worldwide was Mayweather versus McGregor. That's insane.
That show did a lot of money, didn't it?
Number nine is Aaron Hernandez.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Do you know who the ninth most searched for person in the world was this past year?
Conor McGregor?
Milo Yiannopoulos.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Is that ridiculous?
He was gigantic.
Well, especially worldwide if you take like England and shit into account.
Yeah, there's a victim of timing, eh? I mean, like, if he had actually come around after the Weinstein stuff broke, he might be a victim. Like, he really was, like, you know, legitimately molested by a fucking priest, apparently. Like,
yeah.
But unfortunately, he
that
wrote.
Explains why he behaves the way he does.
I think it does in some part, yeah. Don't rape little kids or else they're gonna lead alt-right video game movement.
And lastly, if you had to guess what the number one search for how to blank was, what would you guess it would be? You know, you would type into Google, you know, how to fix the sink.
Right. What did people, how to fidget spin?
Ooh, that's number eight. How to make a fidget spinner.
I'm trying to think of what's really fucking stupid this year.
People got into it.
People are like,
I deal with it on like a weekly basis.
How to tip?
No, that would be, I don't go out to eat much.
How to, you work at a fucking restaurant though.
Yeah, but I've got different aspects to my life. I'm not that one dimensional.
How to put a band-aid on your kid? How to?
I'll just tell you.
All right, yeah.
How to make slime?
Oh, I wouldn't have got that one. Although I do remember that shit.
My daughter is like obsessed with it.
Really?
Like, yeah, they get like glue and they mix cornstarch. Oh,
I've seen it. Yeah, it's
weird. It's really weird. Cause I remember slime from like Nickelodeon. You can't do that on television. Mm-hmm. And they would dump slime on people. Like silly putty and that sort of stuff was a thing when I was a kid. But like they literally, like she'll buy like clear Elmer, she doesn't buy it, we buy it for her, but
the glue,
clear Elmer's glue and different stuff. Like sometimes some use flour, some use like dish detergent and different shit. But it gets everywhere. It's such a pain in the ass. I'm like, all right, you can do it if you clean it up. And then like, her and my son like half-ass clean it up, and then it's just like all over like the faucet and the handles to the faucet, so then you gotta use the faucet like 2 hours later or whatever, and it's like got slime crusted all over it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I remember when I first heard about that, one of my first reactions was, I say the word again a lot, was...
Don't say it again.
Yeah, my first reaction was, this sounds like a disaster. Like... There's no way, like, this is the worst thing almost ever for a parent. Like, I'm very aware of that stuff when I buy Christmas gifts for little kids. Yeah. I'm always like, oh, that's too loud. That's too flashy. That needs batteries. I'll just give them a gift card. Like, look, you got an obligation to not create a product and put it on the market that just encourages your kids to make a mess. Like, that's a horrible thing. Like, god damn, that's as bad as a Betty Crocker, the oven thing.
Easy bake oven,
yeah.
Those aren't that bad. They're pretty self-contained. It's when they want to cook legit, that's when you have a problem. The other how-to options, number two is how to make solar eclipse glasses. Yeah. Trump did not Google that. Number three was how to watch the solar eclipse. Trump did not check that one out. And number four is how to watch Mayweather versus McGregor. Fucking crazy. That is unbelievable to me. Granted, it's a younger generation. They're more apt to like Google stuff like that. But even so, like the number four how-to search was Mayweather versus McGregor. And then the number six overall search in the world was Mayweather versus McGregor fight. That's a big fucking deal, man. And that's why it's like, McGregor's next fight could do 2 million buys, no problem.
Oh, yeah, easy.
A worldwide huge star now.
Yeah.
If he ever fights again.
Yep. And, again, that the fight had that feel of this is this once in a generation deal. And honestly, the way it delivered, I think it'll be remembered very, very fondly. I would say it's the biggest moment of Conor's career. I mean, not Mayweather's, but it might be the most memorable moment of Mayweather's career.
Probably knockout win. Yeah.
Yeah, because like the Pacquiao fight was big, but it was such a disappointment. This is the first time Mayweather ever had a fight that people paid for. It was over. They were happy. That's right. Never happened before. Ever.
Yeah.
Because he's a dick. He beats women.
He claims that's fake news. And number five is how to buy Bitcoin.
All those searches came the past week.
People who, have you ever been to a bar mitzvah?
I don't think so, no.
I have not either. In Manhattan, a couple says a hotel left about 150 bar mitzvah guests so hungry that the adult had to resort to raiding the kids' ice cream, according to a lawsuit. Mom and party host Nancy Held charges in a Manhattan Supreme Court lawsuit that Hotel Aventi badly botched the $37,000 banquet. Held spent years planning her daughter's big day, especially after the mom was misdiagnosed in 2013 with a fatal genetic mutation. The trouble at the Midtown venue began when the manager who was supposed to oversee the event left early, court papers allege. Held planned 700 past hors d'oeuvres, but most never made it to the guests. The entrees of steak or scallops were then served ice cold, Held alleges. Those who sent their entrees back to the kitchen allegedly helping.
What
was no bet.
What was ice cold? Steak and what?
You say scallops.
No, but what is a scallop?
It's like shellfish.
And this is a bat mitzvah with shellfish?
Yes.
Jews aren't supposed to eat shellfish, I don't think. I thought that wasn't kosher. I may be completely fucking this up and being overly dramatic for no reason. Anyways, go on. I'll look it up.
I'll find out in a minute. Do you say scallop?
Scallop.
Yeah, out here it's scallop.
Huh.
It's a weird thing. It's only like New England say scallop. It might even be more local, like Massachusetts. Anyway, dessert wasn't sweet either. The adult guests at the Held party were so hungry, as little to any desserts were being served, that many of the adults ate the kids' ice cream.
Fucking called it. Leviticus says that shellfish are not kosher. Fish must have fins and scales to be kosher. Yeah.
I think technically a scallop is a bivalve, I think. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe there were non-Jews there.
They served all that for the non-Jews.
Well, if you had to check, I would probably pick the steak anyway. And I'm non-Jewish.
Oh, yeah, me too. But, I mean, it's a fucking bat mitzvah. And also, according to this thing here, scallops are not considered kosher, even if they're bivalve or anything.
Interesting.
They have to have fins and scales.
There's something gone awry here, clearly. The dad says, we were starving. We were hosting the party and we didn't have any food to eat. The hotel allegedly offered $1,000 and a night in the suite to make up for the party faux pas. Later, a friend who was also planning a party discovered Hotel Aventi was allegedly using pictures of the Held's daughter along with the child's name without permission in advertisements to prospective customers, according to the lawsuit. The couple is seeking $637,000 in damages. The hotel has declined comment on the litigation.
Wonder if this is, if it's Rory Moore's lawyer.
Did you say Roy Moore or Rory Moore?
Roy Moore.
Rory Moore is funnier.
Yeah, Rory Moore.
Yeah.
He likes to return videotapes and molest little girls.
Can you sue a restaurant for serving shitty food?
Yeah. You can sue anybody for anything. Can you win? I can envision a scenario where you could win, yeah.
Isn't it kind of open to interpretation, though? How do you define what not good food or not enough food is?
You just bring in an expert. Seriously, it's the same thing with any, like, we use experts.
But couldn't you could bring me in and you could bring in some other schmuck and we could both say, oh yeah, that sounds like enough food. And the other guy be like, no, that's not enough. And then the jury just decides.
Well.
Is that how that goes?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean,
you
go to the credibility of the expert. We use expert testimony for all kinds of things. Almost anyone can be an expert on something if they show they have knowledge beyond, you know, a normal person in that area. And, yeah, I think I can make a good case that you're an expert. You've been in the restaurant business for a long damn time. Like, there's probably certain things that you're actually a legitimate expert at compared to a special layperson. An expert isn't to convince you, it's just to paint the full picture. So, yeah, I would say that, like, if you go to, Next, that's the name of a fancy restaurant. If you went to Next.
I'm surprised you know Next.
I don't know how I fucking remembered that. And, that one doesn't totally work because of the nature.
Do you know anything about Next?
That's one where they have the set menu, you don't know what it is, and you gotta get your reservations like 5 months in advance, and you show up and you eat what they give you.
kind of, sort of. It's a Grant Achatz restaurant, and he originally opened Alinea, which was like a top five restaurant in the world when they come out with those rankings, and was a huge deal. Next was like a sister restaurant he opened. And, I mean, if you go to Alinea, it's a set menu and you're getting what they give you. And Next, I think they change the menu up like every 6 weeks, but they'll do cool shit like Paris, you know, 1902, and they'll base the menu on what was like hot in Paris in 1902. And like, they do like cool out of the box shit like that. But what's interesting about their like business model is they use a program that basically the owner of the restaurant created called Talk, where you buy tickets to the restaurant.
Right.
Like, you don't call for reservations. You say, oh, there's a, you know, Saturday night at 7 o'clock. I want two people. I'll buy those tickets, and we go and we eat, and it takes whatever, 3 hours, and you hang out, which is a cool concept for the restaurant, because a big problem restaurants have is reservations that don't show up. Like, you've got a busy night. You've got all these tables booked. You have them all planned out. Then the six top doesn't show and you're out. For them, you're talking, it could be $1,000 paying $200 per person plus wine and everything else. So it's like, if the putty doesn't show up, you still have that money. You're not out that money.
And I like
somebody
it.
Gets sick. And it's a cool concept. And if you've got the money and you want to pay for it.
And if you're, you know, a patron, you go, all right, I can pretty much, you know, guarantee my spot. But really know it's guaranteed, and you know you're not going to get overwhelmed in the restaurant. Like, you're going to get a better experience. I like that a lot. But anyways, going back to the original point, yeah, you could sue a restaurant. Because say that you went to Alinea, and you had been there, you know, several times before, and this time you showed up, and it was very clear that they just went and they got some chicken breasts from a whole, like, not from Costco, and just grilled them up and threw some Tabasco sauce on it and served it to you. When you'd ordered something else, you'd be like, this is not what I fucking ordered. It's, you know, you can't say I'm getting a $500 piece of chicken and serve me McDonald's. Well, you could, I guess, but honestly, you could probably do that at one of those restaurants, because the people would just be like, whoa, he's so postmodern with his approach. Here, he's deconstructing society itself and our commercialization of the food by charging 100 times what he paid for it so we could experience this together. And he's sitting back there going, these fucking morons.
When I went out to Chicago, I don't know how long ago, probably 8 or 9 years ago, and we actually ate at Alinea. And it's one of those things you would do once in your life because it's so expensive, but also to see the place and you've heard about it and you want to just try and experience this restaurant that's supposed to be the best restaurant in the country, like, legitimately. It was interesting that, like, I probably wouldn't ever go there again, even if I had money, because I saw it once and that was good, and I'd rather spend money on other things. But, it's one of those things, if you can do it, I would do it.
I feel like some of those types of restaurants, like, they're not really restaurants. Like, to me, a restaurant is you open it up and you intend to just serve people food.
Yeah.
This is an experience that happens to involve food, but the food's, like, it's just part of it. Whereas a restaurant, the food is the thing.
Yeah. You're going for a show. You're going
it's
for
like
experience.
Adult Chuck E. Cheese.
It was like a 4-hour thing. You're there for the night. Like, you're not going out to dinner, then a movie. The dinner is the movie.
Yeah, and people like me who just like, I like the way that tastes. I just snarfed it down. Oh, I'm good. Let's just drink some of the cheap well vodka here. Let's go. Oh, if you got any hot dogs from 7-Eleven?
And most of the time, that's great. Like I said, it's once in a lifetime thing. I think your billionaire probably goes there all the time, but for normal people, it's something you do once in your life. But Next is cool because it's a little less money, and they change it up. And there's a different thing. Like, they did one based on, like, childhood, where it was, like a new version of macaroni and cheese and different stuff like that. Like, they different, like s'mores, like, cooked table side, shit like that. So that's kind of a cool scene. They're always trying to do something different, so I respect that. Something I meant to talk about earlier when we were talking more politics. Omarosa, who a lot of people didn't even know had a job in the Trump administration, was officially let go. She's claiming she's resigned, but apparently she was fired and had to be dragged from the grounds of the White House, kicking and screaming. General Kelly apparently fired her and she didn't like it and, had to be removed.
Yeah, I didn't know she had a real job there. Like, I had heard, like, she had some involvement in the administration, but I thought it was just, you know, Trump being Trump and trying to tie in his shit.
She did something in the White House. Like, I'm not exactly sure what her title was. Something with the press or something in the White House.
But even then, I thought it was like, I didn't think it was a real job that you, like, the kind of job you get upset at if you didn't keep it, or that you would be around the White House so much that you'd piss off General Kelly. Like, that's pretty impressive there to fucking do that. And I read some report that she tried to, like, get back in the White House to go talk to Trump himself or something. And at that moment, she realized she'd fucked up. Because you go, oh, wait, this isn't like before. These men here will just kill me because they don't care that it's Donald Trump. They're just here to protect the president. It also goes to show kind of how this whole thing's working, where a fucking woman is a reality TV star. Maybe she's accomplished some shit for real. I don't actually know, but for all intents and purposes, a reality TV star thought, I can just fucking go in here and talk to the president of the United States. We're friends. And if it had been a year or 2 years ago, yeah, she could have got away with it. That would have absolutely worked in Trump Tower. She would have been like, I'm Omarosa. They'd be like, oh, I wonder if we're on hidden camera. Is this part of like a promo for NBC? Let's just let her in. All right, let's go with it.
More details. She was the director of communications for the public liaison office. She apparently went out in a hail of profanities as Chief of Staff John Kelly told her to pack her things. She then tried to storm into the president's residence to appeal the decision to the commander-in-chief. General Kelly kicked her out with high drama. Omarosa was offering vulgarities and curse words as she was escorted out of the building and off the campus, according to April Ryan, a White House bureau chief.
So she was the communications director for the public liaisons. She was the person that did the PR for the PR people. Right. Yeah, you know, I was like, you stories like this, and I can't remember where it was, but I saw somebody, I think it was on Twitter, and they made the joke with Kim Jong-un and his people there in North Korea. Apparently they believe that he can actually control the weather. And the joke was kind of like, you know, every time we're just about to be really scared of you, North Korea, you go ahead and you do things like think that he can control the weather, and we all go, eh, you're not really a big threat. I think that's a lot of what we're seeing here. Every time people are like, oh, Trump's crazy, he's going to really blow everybody up, and then you realize, Omarosa tried to storm in his residence because she was employed there and just been fired. Eh, we're not really too worried what he's going to do.
I'm watching a video right now. A daredevil falls to his death from a 62-story building. I don't know if there's an actual clip of a falling. I didn't see that, fortunately. But essentially in China, this guy would record himself with, like, selfie sticks. He's 26 years old, Wang Yongying. He called himself China's first rooftopper. Plunged from the Huaiyan...
Do other countries have rooftoppers?
I don't know.
Who's America?
I've seen video. There's some guy like in Russia who stands on the top of shit and takes pictures. This doesn't seem like an American thing. This seems more.
Hey, so you're on a date. So what do you do? Oh, I'm a nurse. What about you? I stand on the top of shit and take photos of myself on top of tall things that are kind of dangerous. And what else do you do? That's it. I just stand on things. I'm not supposed to stand on them. Somebody has to break the law. I'm kind of a badass.
There's a video clip which has racked up more than 15 million views on Chinese social media, and he had apparently already reached the roof of the skyscraper, lowering himself over the edge of the building to do a pull-up stunt. But when he tried to hoist himself back up, he struggled for a few moments before losing his grip and plummeting down the side of the building. The camera phone that he had set up to record the stunt quickly lost sight of him. Authorities described the fatal fall as an accident and ruled out foul play, according to the report. Police believe he plunged about 45 feet onto a terrace and died of his injuries either during or right after the plunge.
Scaring the shit out of some kid just walking along.
Oh, I know. Imagine if he fell on you. Like, not only do you die, but you kill the person down below. You know, like, the stories, like, if you drop a penny off the Empire State Building, it'll hit somebody in the head and, like, go through their skull and kill them?
I mean, it doesn't, but yeah.
But that's what people say.
Right.
Imagine, like, a human being falling on you from 60 stories above. Holy shit.
I mean, imagine just standing... Oh, wait a second. You fall from that high up and presumably just hit the ground. I don't think there's much left of you at that height. Like, you're just like, you've seen, it's like going to see Gallagher. That's what it looks like.
His girlfriend, identified only as Jinjin, told the outlet that she believes Yang Ying took an elevator over 40 floors and began his climb nearly 20 more floors until he reached the spot where he filmed. The building is only open to the public until the 44th floor. Beyond that, key cards are needed to access the Grand Hyatt Hotel. Yang Ying would have received 100,000 yuan, about $15,000 USD, for the stunt, his family told the Herald. It is unclear who was offering that prize.
I like this. They said that his girlfriend, who was only identified as Jing Jing. If they had just said his girlfriend Jing Jing, none of us would have known that that was weird. This is not like his girlfriend only identified as Cat Lady. I'd be like, I don't know. Yeah, Jing Jing. Sounds like a name to me.
And to tie it all in, Yang Ying was known for scaling skyscrapers without any safety equipment, just his own mixed martial arts training and careful planning.
Yeah, protect the neck. Don't cross your feet. Here's how you climb up a 60-story building and take a selfie. That was, that's how you get your red belt.
Apparently he needed to work more on hand fighting because he couldn't hold on to the ledge of the building.
Yeah, you gotta build up that grip strength, man. Grips are everything.
Like, what are you doing? Like,
it's
part
just
of me is like, oh, well, no, but part of me is like I'm a pussy because I would never even think to do something like that. But the other part of me is like, how dumb do you have to be to hang off the side of a building 60 stories up? Like, why risk your life for that? Like, I'm not the type that's going to jump out of an airplane. And part of me, it's like, you know what? It's probably safe. Nobody ever really gets hurt. But, like, why risk it? But something like that, like, you're literally dangling over the edge of the building with nothing. Like, what are you thinking?
It's just, there's some people like that. It's Evel Knievel. It's Harry Houdini, more or less. I mean, how fucking Houdini died because of that shit. People just, I don't know, man. People just like to do stupid shit and get attention for it.
Yeah, I guess if you're getting attention, I guess.
Yeah, and you can make money doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, there's something there, I guess. But I'm just saying, even people jumping out of airplanes and doing shit like that, it's like,
yeah, you get to feel alive. There's a rush to it. I can. It's like riding a roller coaster. Just as
see, I feel like a roller coaster is more safe.
It is. It's safer. But to people that don't like roller coasters, they think that's crazy because it's just like jumping out of an airplane. All they see is the 100% negative if it gets fucked up. But you know, people just like to. I think that because we're so safe these days, we want to feel a little danger, man. You know, we don't want to die, but we want to know the death is out there.
Something that has gone extinct and is definitely dead is these giant penguins. Did you see these things?
Yeah, China. No.
New Zealand, home of Mark Hunt.
Yeah, New Zealand. Cause I started thinking about evolution after that, yeah.
You think these penguins evolved into Mark Hunt?
I don't know what that is, man. You get Australia and New Zealand. They got some weird shit there. That's like, I don't know if it's 100% proof or not proof of evolution. I'm not smart enough to figure out the difference, but it's proof of something.
So essentially they discovered these fossils in New Zealand and, it's basically a penguin that is the size of a grown man. In the article that was funny was saying it's roughly the size of the captain of the Pittsburgh Penguins. The creature was slightly shorter in length and about 20 pounds. It measured 5 feet 10 inches long when swimming and weighed about 223 pounds.
This is a big guy.
Yeah, when standing, the ancient bird was about 5'3". It's about 7 inches longer than any other ancient penguin that has left a substantial portion of a skeleton.
Wait, what? 7 inches longer?
Yeah.
That's it?
There's other big ones.
I was gonna say, Have I missed the memo on man-sized penguins that roam the earth? How has that not been taught in school?
I don't know. Well, apparently the biggest penguin today, the emperor in Antarctica, stands less than 4 feet tall. So it's 1.2 meters.
They look cute things. You can pat them on the head.
But 4 feet's pretty tall.
I guess. I don't really have a concept of smaller than 5 feet or whatever, like whatever adults are.
Well, think of a yard sticking out another foot.
I know. I can understand it.
I'm trying to help you picture it.
You have little kids. You have an idea of the lesser feet when it comes to height and shit.
I didn't realize there were 4 foot tall penguins around the world today.
Yeah, that's really weird, man. Honestly, that makes the 5.5 foot tall penguin much less impressive. Like, I was thinking of penguins as being like 2 feet tall, like the size of a dog. And so I hear like a man-sized penguin, like, it's pretty badass. I saw a story about, they found some tick in Amber.
Yeah, I saw that too.
With
like,
next to a dinosaur feather, and it's just like right out of, very well written article, I think, in the Washington Post. And, it was all about, you know, it sounds like some out of Jurassic Park, but they can't do it and blah, blah, blah. I just remember thinking, they said like, the scientists found the tick next to the dinosaur feather, and they went on, and I'm like, when did it become so common and normal that we're all just like, oh yeah, by the way, dinosaurs all have feathers, and we all just went, oh okay, because I grew up my whole life and dinosaurs didn't have feathers, and I know that this kind of become like the new thing, but it seems like everybody just went really quickly along with just being like, yep, feathers. That's just how dinosaurs look, man. Just big old fucking lizards with feathers. Nothing weird at all. Go on with your life.
Researchers believe these penguins died out when large marine mammals like toothed whales and seals showed up and provided competition for safe breeding places and food. The newcomers may have also hunted the big penguins, so they think they were just killed off by new species that came along. But the thing I was picturing, I don't know if you remember Billy Madison.
Yeah.
There was like a human-sized penguin moving around. That's what I pictured. Like,
that's what I pictured too.
Like Chris Farley and him hanging out by the pool.
There's something about an animal like a penguin that when you blow it up to 5 feet just becomes, or 6 feet, becomes terrifying. I feel like the one thing I got over is I can just like, you know, kick a penguin, but like, it's a 6 foot tall bird with a beak and shit and it's on the land right next to me. It's got wings and all that. The only thing I could really, I mean, I guess it didn't walk too well, but it's still a bird. I don't want to touch a bird.
In the world of real sports, in the NFL, quarterback Carson Wentz has torn his ACL. He's the Eagles quarterback. The Eagles were probably the favorite to go to the Super Bowl from the NFC, but with Wentz going down, I don't know where that leaves the Eagles.
Did we talk about my love of Wentz or whatever?
No.
I feel like that may have, I don't know, I was talking to somebody about it, but like how, maybe I was talking to myself.
Usually.
How I like that guys like Carson Wentz are showing up in the league, and it's kind of like, oh, okay, this is the next Tom Brady guy, and like he's really good, and then it's like, up, oh, and he's fucked. But on the other hand, I'm really glad to see Philadelphia, anything bad happen to them, because I think it's like a shit town. So yeah, it's a win-win.
I mean, that's got to make the Patriots the favorite for the Super Bowl, even though they lost on Monday night, yeah?
I would normally say yes. Although I do think that this year the Patriots have looked a little more vulnerable this year than in other years. Like there's just been enough. Like some of the shine's coming off on Tom Brady. Like it's not like he sucks or anything like that. He's still maybe the best quarterback in the league, but he's not what he once was. Like he's making a few more mistakes than we would have ever seen the old Tom Brady make. But man, if they get to the fucking Super Bowl, you don't bet against Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Fuck.
I mean, just record-wise, I think Philadelphia is 11-2. Obviously, they're in the NFC, but in the AFC, the Pats are 10-3, and I think they've got the best record in the AFC.
Yeah, but
so.
They just lost to Jay Cutler.
Yeah, they didn't have. Pittsburgh's 11-2. That's a big game this Sunday.
Also, Pittsburgh, the Patriots, like that division, is so fucking weak. I mean, ugh.
They still manage their way out of it.
Yeah, they do win the Super Bowl too, so good for them.
So yeah, that's our NFL coverage for the week. Maybe we'll talk again about football come the Super Bowl.
Sure.
Going back, we've, need to go back and cover a few stories from the past. It's official. The Monster Fatburg in England is going to be put up in a museum.
Of course.
If you remember that, that's all the baby wipes and everything.
I'm surprised they didn't put it into a meat pie or some shit like that, but yeah.
Oh yeah, like a puff pastry or something.
I don't know, they just put everything in pies over there. They're fucking morons. Just find a bunch of disgusting things and put it in a pie.
So here's some stats on the Fatburg. I know we've talked about this before, but it's 250 meters long. It weighed 130 tons. And I guess they're going to take a cross section of this thing and put it up in a museum in England where you can go and look at it. Is that something that would interest you?
Come see this physical representation of all the negative repercussions of our horrible lifestyle put on display for you. Fucking morons. Also, this feels like a French art exhibit, not English.
Pretty sure it's English.
No, I know it's English. I'm just saying it feels like something the French would do.
Do you know what they did with the rest of it? The rest of the Fatburg?
What's a horrible thing that would happen in 2017? Did they try to, like, get rid of it and then wash ashore to Ireland?
No, they converted it into biodiesel.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I can't imagine how you turn all that sludge and wet wipes and shit, turn it into fuel, but that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, shit's fuel and stuff.
Like manure, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I didn't think of it that way. That's why you're here.
Just baby shit.
And lastly...
Baby manure.
Finally, there's another mystery pooper. This time in New York. The first mystery pooping was reported on November 8th by a woman who told police she found feces and tissue outside her home. The woman also said she thought the poopitrator was a jogger and said that had happened on more than one occasion. This is just outside of Buffalo. Police say they only received one complaint. An ad placed in the Orchard Park Penny Saver earlier this month suggested the public dumping had happened numerous times. The ad warning of security cameras and increased police patrols is signed by the homeowners whose property you invaded. So apparently this is a new trend. If you remember back, there was a female
in Colorado
Springs called the Mad Pooper. Then also earlier this month, a homeowner in Sacramento released a video showing an Amazon delivery contractor leaving a pile of feces in front of his house. And then we also had back in June Justine Kish pooping herself during a fight. So this seems to be like the hot new thing.
Yeah.
Shit everywhere.
I was wondering if this is new or if this is like always gone on, but now that we have cell phones, we're all talking about it. Just like for years, everybody just like had this one weird story, be like, I don't know, man, like, for 3 weeks straight, just somebody shit in our front yard. I don't know what the fuck was going on there. And it became this urban legend in the family. But then I thought, well, if you go back pretty much before like 1920 or whatever, people just threw their shit out of their windows. So, I don't know, we are kind of just a pooping people. That's what we do as a species. We just poop everywhere.
Apparently, but
everybody poops everywhere.
That's a book. Everyone poops. It's a kid's book.
Yes.
I didn't know that was common knowledge for people of your ilk.
I have uncommon knowledge.
One more question for you. I know you hate movies from the 80s, but are you into any Christmas movies at all? Do you watch Christmas movies?
Yeah.
What's your favorite Christmas movie ever?
A Christmas Story.
Okay, that's up there for me too. How do you feel about National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation?
It's good, it's fine.
Alright.
Very reminiscent of like my childhood and shit.
Do you consider Home Alone a Christmas movie?
I think I do, yeah. Because the message that comes together is like a Christmassy message by the end. So yeah, it's a Christmas movie.
Okay, fair enough. That's all I have this week. All
right.
Alrighty. Thank you for listening to MMA and stuff. This is Matt. That was Mike. Halfguarded.com. iTunes, Google Play. Check us out, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. Thanks for listening.
Get up, cocksuckers, it's all over. Listen, we had a rough couple of months. Fucking Katrina's cousin Maria, the other one, Puerto Rico, Houston, fucking Florida. Listen, it's been tough up to now. The earthquake in Mexico, you know, the White House, whoever the fuck is going on. But it don't matter. They want to shoot, it's time for us to fucking shoot, cocksuckers. They want to get down and dirty. Don't forget who the fuck we are, you understand me? We're the baddest motherfuckers out there. You send a message to that fucking North Korean, he's gonna be sniffing my dick and sucking my asshole. That's the focus. We're going to North Korea in like a year. It's gonna be an island. It's gonna glow in the dark. You know why? Because we're Americans, cocksuckers. Who the fuck do you think you're dealing with? Stop with the gun control. They're selling more guns than ever the last 3 days. Stop with the fucking whining. Stop with the Russians on Facebook. I don't give a fuck. Worry about yourself. Keep your eyes open. And get the fuck off Snapchat and fucking Twitter, cocksucker. Stay black.